Ladies and gentlemen, it is Friday, April 19th, 2024. This is the InfoWars War Room, brought to you by InfoWarsStore.com, your election headquarters with 201 days left until the 2024 election, and we are just absolutely loaded today. First off, let me tell you the guests we have coming up, because we've got a lot of big guests. We have Chase Geiser in studio at 3:30. And he's going to have the latest breaking information dealing with the self-emulator outside of the Trump case earlier today. He also may have a couple clips from Joe Rogan, Tucker Carlson on the Rogan podcast. We may have those to debut as well, as that is breaking with some interesting things there. We have Alex Rosen from Predator Poachers. This is unbelievable stuff. Catches a child predator known to law enforcement with explicit illegal content on his phone dealing with children. I'll just leave it at that. And the cops let him go. Stunning. Stunning stuff. Caught with illicit images of children and let go. So he'll break all that down for us. 4 o'clock. Brianna Morello, she's talking to members of the House Republicans and digging deeper into this betrayal by Mike Johnson. And now we have crossed the Rubicon. And it might be fair to say Mike Johnson is worse than Kevin McCarthy. I think that is now the majority opinion on the matter. So we'll talk about that development with her. And then the lawyer for Dexter Taylor, Carbon Mike, who sits in prison right now because he likes to tinker with guns. Never took them out of his house, never sold them, really never did anything illegal, never even let anybody know he had guns. So he's probably being illegally spied on by the government. Just tinkers with guns in his own house because he's into engineering like that. Calls himself a tinkerer. He also likes sound engineering, building studios, likes building stuff. So he had some guns, totally, that they didn't know about. So they're called ghost guns. Oh, the government didn't know he had the guns, but somehow they did, because they probably spied on him. And now he sits in Rikers prison and is facing his hearing date, his sentencing date, coming up in a month. So his lawyer is going to be joining us at 5 o'clock. So all of these are big stories, and we're really going to dig into them. I also have a bunch of news, because I'm completely at a loss with this. And the only way, to put it simply, the only way to really say what has happened today, we now live in a single-party dictatorship. And because of Mike Johnson's betrayal and other members of the House, Republicans, the Democrats now run Congress. Chuck Schumer now runs essentially all of Washington, D.C. I mean, the White House still has executive powers, but Joe Biden obviously doesn't run anything. So dirty rat Chuck Schumer pretty much runs D.C. now. And they have rewritten rules, and they have rewritten decorum and proceedings. Everything has been rewritten today, and so the standard checks and balances, the standard rules, the standard proceedings, all of this is now out the window. So it doesn't even matter that the Republicans have a majority in the House. They are completely powerless now because of what happened today. And there's a few Republicans talking about it. So they just say, oh, the House decided to impeach Mayorkas. Chuck Schumer just says, nope, not going to do it. And the Republicans let him do it, because Mitch McConnell's his bitch. All right, so while everyone is distracted by the self-emulator, and I get it, it's a man on fire outside of the courtroom where Trump is being politically persecuted. I get it. He sets himself on fire. It's crazy. The images are crazy. Everybody wants to talk about it. He throws pamphlets with the manifesto, and we'll have more on that. But that has served as a perfect distraction for what happened in Congress today. where the Republican Party, members of the Republican Party have completely sold out to Chuck Schumer and the Democrats, Mitch McConnell included. And with what happened today with rules and proceedings and decorum, we now have we officially have a uniparty in Washington, D.C. And even though the Republicans still have the majority in the House and enough votes, even if there's a minority votes with some rules and some proceedings to still stall Congress and keep things from happening, everything has changed now. They can ram through any funding bill they want. And the House can vote to impeach Mayorkas, and Chuck Schumer can just say no and just block the whole thing. Totally against rules and proceedings. Never unprecedented in congressional history. And Mitch McConnell just says, yep, we're just going to not do it then. No, that's not how it works. The Senate is supposed to be in charge of the trial. The House is supposed to vote on whether it goes to the trial for impeachment. And now the Senate just says, well, yeah, you voted to send this to trial, but we're just going to go ahead and veto this. We're just not going to do it, in other words. So now, anything the House sends up to the Senate can just say no, instead of doing their job and holding a hearing and holding a trial. Unprecedented. I mean, this is, so again, the self-emulator serves as a perfect distraction for the uniparty. We are now in a uniparty. We are officially in uniparty rule, and all the checks and balances are now out the window. Let me stop ranting. Here's Thomas Massie talking about this. The Rules Committee, now we're talking about the funding. Oh, Mike Johnson. Or maybe we should start with Mike Johnson, actually. Maybe we should go back in time, and we'll be talking more about Mike Johnson's betrayal. This is Mike Johnson in January. Senator Mike Lee shares this video, and I'll show you his commentary. Here is Speaker Mike Johnson in January talking about essentially what is the bill that he just passed, that he just supported today. We flash the clock back to January. Here's what he had to say about foreign spending bills then.
What did you feel when you watched the video of George Floyd?
Yeah, no, that's not. Okay, so maybe we don't have that video then. It's the video right here from CNN interview. Okay, we don't have that video. We'll go ahead and find that, and we'll go back to that. So a little unintentional tease there. Here's Thomas Massie talking about this today. The Rules Committee just voted for the rule to bring the $100 billion foreign aid supplemental plus the Repo Act, that's spying on you, the TikTok ban, etc., to the floor without anything for the U.S. border. And by the way, they call it the National Security Bill. Just to spit in your eye a little bit, just to gouge you, just to put their thumb in your eye a little bit more. The National Security Bill. No money for the U.S. southern border. None. Zero. Zilch. Nada. The world record for the largest invasion in the history of the world. Biden's border invasion will continue. And the National Security Bill does nothing to stop it. But don't worry. Plenty of money for Ukraine and Israel and everybody else on the planet. And this is in the Rules Committee that the Republicans have a majority on. Because they wrote a rule about single-item bills. They said, well, we want to have single-item, single-line bills, like a repo bill or a TikTok bill or a funding bill or all these other different issues. We just want single bills. And then 4 Democrats and 5 Republicans voted, no, we're just going to scratch that, and we're just going to throw everything into $100 billion bill. Representative Roy, Norman, and Massey voted against it. So now they have this gigantic pork barrel, $100 billion national security bill, and it has nothing for national security except spying on the American people without a warrant, another attempt to ban TikTok, and nearly $100 billion for foreign countries. and their national security. Nothing for ours, nothing for our border. Zero, zilch, nada. So the Republicans voted against their own rules to try to stop this wasteful spending and say, hey, look, if we have an issue that needs to be voted on, we have a single issue bill, a single item bill, and we can vote for that. But see, that's not how Congress wants to operate, because there might be something that's pressing that you might need to vote on immediately and you might need to get passed immediately. So you have a single issue, single item, you vote on it, you get it done. But then how are you going to get all your pork? How are you going to get all your wasteful spending? How are you going to launder hundreds of billions of dollars? Well, that just doesn't fly. So they just vetoed the rule. The Republicans voted on it, and now they squeezed it all into $100 billion. Nothing for our border, by the way. Thomas Massie continues. The U.S. House is now officially in an alternate universe where the Speaker shares procedural power with Democrats. In other words, the Democrats are running the House with a minority, with a Republican Speaker. It's unfortunate our Speaker has chosen this route just to maintain control of the floor. He will need to rely on dozens of Democrats tomorrow, so this vote will be had tomorrow, and he probably does have the Democrats' votes. But of course he does. They all love spending money overseas, and they're all probably getting their kickbacks. And they slam everything into this bill so everybody's happy, except the American people. Massie continues, and he spoke on the floor today. We'll go to that momentarily. Today, Speaker Johnson employed the help of Democrats to rig the rules of the House. Shamefully, they converted a veterans care bill into a vehicle for passing Schumer's $100 billion package to fund foreign wars. I spoke against the process and the likely results. Here's Massie on the floor today in clip 24.
The gentleman from Texas is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, now I'm pleased to yield 2 minutes to a valuable member of the Committee on Rules, Mr. Massie of Kentucky.
The gentleman from Kentucky is recognized for 2 minutes.
I truly thank the chairman for yielding me time because he knows I'm slightly opposed to the rule, so he's very gracious. I'm concerned that the speaker's cut a deal with the Democrats to fund foreign wars rather than to secure our border. But what I want to talk about today is process. The bill that will come out of the House after all of this is a bill that began as H.R. 815 to expand the eligibility for veterans to receive reimbursements for their emergency care. How did a bill that was intended for veterans that came out of the House become a bill that may bring us to the brink of war at least three places on the globe by sending $100 billion to military contractors? Well, it started in the House, and then the Senate took it and stripped every word from the bill. Why did they do this? Were they trying to get around the origination clause in the Constitution? Were they trying to shortcut some process? It's one of those things. But what we've got now is a collection of bills, and I do appreciate that we get individual votes on four of these bills, but they include $100 billion. They don't include securing our border. They include a bill called the Repo Act, which could call into question the value of our Treasury bills when we go out to auction those next, if we are going to confiscate Treasury bills that we sold to other countries. It also includes a bill that allows the president to ban websites based on his discretion. I'm concerned about that. This bill, H.R. 815,
nice
started as a veterans bill, went to the Senate, got gutted, became the foreign aid package bill. Now, here in the House, we're going to vote on four separate titles, but we're going to package them back as amendments to that H.R. 815. So we're actually going to send it back to the Senate as the bill they sent to us, which is the gutted veterans bill. I know this is all confusing, but why is this all being done this way? Some will say to force the Senate's hand, but really what it's going to do is jam the Senate, the conservatives in the Senate, who would like to have a more fulsome debate. And with that, I am opposed to the rule, and I thank the chairman. I yield back.
Gentleman,
so here's
back.
The problem. Obviously, Chuck Schumer runs the Senate, so this is his money laundering bill. This is his steal your money and give it to foreign countries bill. It's going to it will pass in the Senate, and everybody knows it. But it's likely going to pass in the House tomorrow as well. It's been made clear. Either the Democrats own a lot of these Republicans, or they were always Democrats. I mean, quite literally, Republican in name only? Are they being blackmailed? Are they being threatened? They are the Republicans in the House, the Republicans in this Rules Committee. They just voted against all the rules. They just voted against the Republican agenda. They continue to screw over their constituents. It's insane. And here's what's going to happen. Let's say somehow the Republicans can pull off stalling this. It's unlikely. I wouldn't bet on it. But nonetheless, there will be Republicans that vote against this. There will be sound bites and clips from Massey and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz. We got more of that today. And then the media is going to come out, and the mainstream media is going to come out, and they're going to say, chaos in the GOP, chaos in the Republican Party. Ladies and gentlemen, Congress is in chaos. This is the day, Friday, April 19th, where the mask is off. Uniparty rule in D.C. Doesn't matter who controls the House. Doesn't matter who controls the Senate. Doesn't matter what the voters want. Doesn't matter if there's actual rules debates or rules being violated. Nothing matters. The uniparty in D.C. gets what it wants. This is them mooning us. This is them streaking down the highway. A veterans care bill ends up in $100 billion for foreign countries. Censorship of American citizens. Spying on illegal spying on American citizens without a warrant. Banning popular apps. And they squeeze it all into a bill, and they will vote to pass it. And there's nothing anybody can do about it, and they've made that perfectly clear. And you can't even impeach a member of the Biden administration. Can't even do it. Say, well, what do you mean? Here are the rules. You have a vote in the House. You move forward with the vote. You vote to move it to the Senate. Oh, yeah, the vote happened. They voted to impeach. It's on to the Senate. And the Senate just said, nope, not going to do our job. We're not going to do it. You can't impeach anybody. Can't impeach anybody from the Biden administration. Not going to happen. So it doesn't matter what Mitch McConnell thinks. That's the rule. And Mitch McConnell goes in front of Senate and says, yep, I agree with Chuck Schumer. We're not going to move with this impeachment forward. We're done. We're done. That's your uniparty. It has conquered D.C. And notice, there's no resistance from the Democrat Party. There's no resistance from your AOCs. There's no resistance from your Rashida Tlaibs, your Ilhan Omars, even Ro Khanna falls silent. There's no resistance on the Democrat side. They're all owned. They all shut up. They all get in line when Nancy Pelosi clicks her boot heel. When Chuck Schumer cracks the whip, they all get right in line. And even though, technically speaking, there's enough resistance in the Republican Party to stop some of this stuff, to move some of this forward, to renegotiate some of the stuff, they just change the rules. And they just say, too bad. Oh, you thought you could come in here and use the checks and balances and the levers to stop power, to get into Congress and try to do what the American people want? You really thought you could do that? Chuck Schumer showed up and said, no, you ain't. And now they got Mike Johnson. So here's Mike Johnson in January. Here's Mike Johnson in January as we're about to if you're a betting person, bet they pass this $100 billion fake national security bill tomorrow. Here's Mike Johnson in January.
If the best we can get does not solve the problem and not stem the flow, then it will not be acceptable on the House side. And I have said that very clearly from day one. We have to solve the problem. This is not about getting political points for one side or the other. It's about solving the problem that is now a crisis for every community. Every state is a border state now because people are going all across the country. And by the way, when we were at Eagle Pass, we found out that 60 to 70% of the people crossing the border down there are single adult males between the ages of 18 and 40. These are not huddled masses of families seeking asylum. These are individual single males coming into the country for we don't know what. okay? This is serious business. The facts are alarming, and the American people are sufficiently, I think, alarmed by this, and they want us to make a change. So Republicans and Democrats both should come together and solve it. There's an outcry from Democrat mayors around the country in these so-called sanctuary cities. Speaker, everybody knows we have to fix it.
So instead, Republicans and Democrats have come together to do nothing but ram another foreign aid bill down our throats. Here's what Senator Mike Lee said in response to that video from January. Mike Johnson says, I miss this guy from January. What happened? Has he been skiffed? What did happen in that skiff? What was Mike Johnson shown in that skiff? Couldn't have been anything good. It was either Mike Johnson was shown that terror attacks are imminent in this country because of the open border, and so they have to pass this illegal spying bill, or maybe he was shown something else. It had nothing to do with terrorism at all. Maybe something a little more personal. And then everything changed. And now you have $100 billion, most of it going to Ukraine, none of it going to our southern border, not a penny. And Johnson is going to vote to pass it. This guy, Johnson, has turned out to be really something else, hasn't he? And by the way, let me divert quickly since we're talking about this foreign aid bill. I would just say this, generally speaking, when it comes to the geopolitical developments with Iran and Israel and Russia and Ukraine at this point, folks, we're being lied to about everything. I just want to put it that. Let's just keep it simple today. You're being lied to about everything. So part of me is like, I don't even want to get into it. But here's the message loud and clear. CIA warns Ukraine could lose war this year without fresh aid. And then Mike Johnson goes on the national media and says, Russia is going to invade Europe and march through Europe. Are you starting to get the picture here? The CIA says Ukraine could lose the war this year without fresh aid. Oh, they need $80 billion more dollars. They've only gotten $250 billion. And it hasn't done a damn thing. But if we could just give them $80 billion more, it might keep the war going a little longer. And then more can die, and more money can be laundered, and more weapons can be laundered. And Mike Johnson says, well, as long as we get some border security, wait, never mind, no border security, fund the war. And the CIA says, that's right. That's right. And then you got a Russian aircraft, a long-range strategic bomber falling out of the sky on fire. Ukraine says it blew up the aircraft. It shot it down. Russia says, no, it had an internal failure and it crashed out of the sky. Okay. Then you've got Israel striking Iran, but then Iranian media denying it. Iran denying it, saying, no, we were testing a missile system. It blew up. But Israel claiming, oh, we did strike Iran. You're being lied to. And I think I may have reached, I wouldn't say I've reached a conclusion, but a new realization has come to my head here. Folks, all of these nations are taking advantage of us right now. They're all taking advantage of Joe Biden. We have a dementia-ridden crook in the White House. So Iran is getting paid off. Israel is getting paid off. Ukraine is getting paid off. And Joe Biden has no clue what's going on. How much of this is even real? How much of this is not backroom dealing and causing a bunch of chaos and confusion and war? And then, oh, hey, Joe, we need money. Hey, Joe, we need money. Hey, Joe, we need money. Lies, propaganda, misinformation, false flags. Hey, Joe, we need money. And then they get it every single time. And the intelligence community says, we have to give them money. You need to give them money. And Mike Johnson says, only if we secure the border. Wait, never mind. Send them the money. F the border. We're getting played, folks. We are getting played. We are getting robbed. We are getting played. We are getting lied to. We are getting deceived. It is ridiculous at this point. They don't even have to remain consistent with their lies. There doesn't even have to be logic or reasoning. There doesn't even have to be a mission or a goal or a standard. Nothing. They just say money, 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 money. And they fund both sides every time. Money, 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 money. And your economy is crashing. And your money, your dollar doesn't go as far. Your energy bill goes up. Your price at the pump, your groceries, everything here goes up and 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 up. But anytime these foreign nations pick up the phone after an explosion goes off, Joe, we need more money. And then boom, the Republicans and the Democrats give it to them. Oh, yeah, Hamas is getting money, too. Israel's getting $17 billion. Hamas is getting $9 billion. Ukraine is getting $60 billion. Taiwan is getting $8 billion. And they're promoting it like it's a good thing. And it will most likely pass tomorrow. There'll be Republican holdouts, but it won't be enough. And then the media will say chaos in the Republican Party as the complete country goes into chaos, as D.C. is all in chaos, as our money gets robbed. This isn't like you going into your mom's purse when you're in high school and taking like a $20 bill because you want to go see a movie with your girlfriend on the weekend. No. These crooks go in and grab $100 billion. That's how big of a joke it is. It's like grandpa with dementia and likes to drink beer all day is passed out on the couch, and we know he carries hundreds of dollars in his wallet. We're going to go fleece him for $1,000. Hey, we know grandpa likes to have a bunch of $100 bills in his wallet. He's been drinking all day, and he's got dementia. He won't know the difference. And then they take every single dollar. And the Republicans thumb up it, and the Democrats thumb up it, and then they stick their thumbs up our ass. And then stick it in our mouth and tell us it tastes great and it's patriotic. And we just get robbed every time. So I'm so sick of it. All right, Chase guys are in studio coming up next. All right, I'm going to calm down here. I have a guest in studio, Chase Geiser. And he's been digging into this self-emulator outside of the courtroom there in New York, which really has served as a nice distraction for the Uniparty taking over. But nonetheless, all right, Chase, give me the latest here. What do we know?
So last I looked, and this is obviously a developing story, even though the flame has been extinguished.
Crazy images, by the way.
Crazy images. It looks like a self-immolation. I mean, we've seen it all the way back to Vietnam. We saw it earlier with the Free Palestine guy. And we see it now with this guy. Now, when I first saw this, and we had a little bit of debate about this behind the scenes, I thought this was going to be a pro-Trump person that was protesting the negative fake kangaroo court trial that was going on. Owen thought that the opposite might be the case because traditionally speaking, it's been leftists that have done this sort of radical, psychologically ill thing. And it turns out that it was nothing of the sort as far as we can tell from these details. It turns out that this was a stage to protest something else. Now, I found a couple of clips, Owen, of the immolator. And it seems like he was protesting a kleptocracy, as he calls it. This is a takeover of world government, our own government, by billionaires using cryptocurrency. He was a conspiracy theorist. We've got his manifesto here. And maybe we should just watch these short clips really quick, and then we can unpack it from there. So go ahead and run clips 1 and 2 back to back as one clip, and we'll talk about it.
Pollution. Stop.
So you can skip straight to clip 2 if this one's uncensored, because I don't think there's any foul language in clip 2. Okay, good.
Go ahead.
Start a revolution. You've got nothing to lose.
Hey, want to learn the biggest secret in the world? In March 2023, sketchy billionaire Peter Thiel started a bank run. I did 1,500 hours of research, and I learned all their rotten secrets. The big one is that cryptocurrency is history's first planetary multi-trillion dollar Ponzi scheme. That's an economic doomsday device. And when that Ponzi goes insolvent, as all Ponzis must, we'll get the worst economic collapse in world history. And every powerful person you can think of is in on it. Want to know why everything gets worse and more expensive? That's because we live in a secret kleptocracy. That's when the government gets taken over by con artists whose only job is to steal from the public. And I hope you know this is wonderful news. Because now that the public knows about the secret kleptocracy, they get to abolish their criminal government. Follow for more, or read this booklet, and you will bend history.
That's not the same booklet he threw up today before
I think it might be. I think it is the same document.
Is it the same one?
I'm not 100% sure. Now, this guy's name is Max Azzarello. I don't know for sure if this is actually the person that did the self-immolation. This is all breaking. This is something that Krasenstein posted, those clips. Ryan Krasenstein posted it. So I think it's him, but I can't say with any certainty. Obviously, it's a tragedy that's happened. I don't want to disparage anyone, but I believe that that document that he held up is the same thing as the manifesto, because the cover of it looks like some of the screenshots that I saw from censored men on Twitter. We've got a whole printed copy of it here, where he goes into this conspiracy theory about cryptocurrencies being used to sort of establish this new world order and total takeover, this kleptocracy.
Well, what's interesting to me, and people, again, this is all developing, people have also claimed that they found his Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
Thread, and he claims to be, or this account that they claim is his, claims to be an anarcho-communist, a proponent of left unity. So that would lead me to think he's kind of an anti-establishment leftist. What's strange to me is to go after crypto as a Ponzi scheme, which obviously there are Ponzi schemes within crypto. We witnessed that with the Sam Bankman-Fried deal. You know, that whole Ponzi scheme came apart at the seams. Maybe it disrupted their larger plans even. But the real Ponzi scheme, the real economic collapse is going to be the U.S. dollar. It's not going to be any of these crypto coins. I mean, people might rig and scam you on that, but the thing that's going to crash the economy is the U.S. dollar into a central bank. I mean, that's the real plan to me.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of unhinged people, that they're right and wrong at the same time. Ted Kaczynski's a famous example of this. Right about all the problems, wrong about the solution being mailing bombs to civilians, right? And I think you're absolutely right. The Ponzi scheme is the dollar, and cryptocurrency may or may not be a solution that isn't a Ponzi scheme. But one thing is for sure, these central bank digital currencies that are being advocated by the governments of the world are going to be the currency that they're going to try to usher in for this great reset. And if central bank digital currencies are established, then they can track all of our purchases. They can allocate certain amounts of our funds to be allowed to be spent on fuel versus groceries versus meat versus salad or bugs, right? So I think that might be what he was trying to say, but he was obviously psychologically, mentally struggling with something and unable to articulate it in that way. So again, this is an example of somebody, this is what happens in civilization when there's something terribly wrong. A lot of times I think the schizophrenic types pick up on it first and the response seems irrational, but it's because the input is also irrational. When the whole world stops making sense, then the first people that struggle are the ones that can't make sense of the world as it is.
Well, that's kind of been the theme of some of my monologues this week. And you know, I tend to point it at the left because traditionally that's where it leans. I mean, traditionally the more psychotic breaks happen with the left. Right wingers are usually able to remain more, at least as a whole, a little more grounded,
right,
if you will. It's usually the left that has the psychotic break from reality. And we're definitely witnessing that again. It looks like this guy could potentially be another example of that. But I think the larger story is exactly what you said. The world doesn't make any sense right now. Anybody that sits down and tries to rationally make sense of it can't. It doesn't. And the conclusion you land on is that we live in an extremely corrupt time. We're being robbed. We're being lied to. We're being deceived. We're being turned into these global corporate government slaves. And I guess some people can't handle that realization and they decide the only thing they can do is to try to burn themselves alive and maybe draw attention to it that way.
That's what I struggle with. I have a very hard time understanding the rationale behind self-immolation as a form of protest. It seems to me that you can be so much more impactful if you stay alive and fight every day than if you just do a Hail Mary and then you're done. I mean, there's nothing else this man can do to solve the problem that was clearly bothering him so much. And I know that maybe it's senseless or moot to try to rationalize something that's just blatantly irrational like self-immolation, but I don't necessarily believe that everybody who turns to radical methods of protest is an insane person. It seems like this is probably the case, that this person is struggling with something. It seems like the Free Palestine person was struggling with something. I don't know the context of the Buddhist guy during Vietnam, whether he actually had any mental illness or not, or whether it was a religious thing that he had rationalized a different way. But I just don't understand why people think that this is the best way to solve these problems. I tweeted something about it earlier today. I said, it's not about what you're willing to die for. It's about what you're willing to live for, right? And we should be fighting every day like the Alex Joneses or the Owen Schroyers, despite all odds, to solve these problems rather than just burning out, literally burning out.
Well, and I guess maybe the difference is maybe this gentleman just didn't enjoy life anymore.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's so important to remember to enjoy life. I mean, remember to truly cherish life. And again, where's the theme here? The left doesn't cherish life. You know, that's a big difference, I think, between the right and the left as well. The left does not cherish life like we see on the right. But for this individual, obviously, will probably come out, find out about some mental problems. Whenever this becomes the official story or they release the hospital records, it's likely there's probably going to be some mental problems, maybe some pharmaceutical drugs, but I guess we won't.
I'm told he's in critical condition. I don't even think he died.
Really?
Now, I'm not positive about that, but
well, he saw, there was the images. He's like sitting up like a guy who just roasted himself in the stretcher going into the ambulance. So I guess, wow, that'd be something.
Yeah, I think he's in critical condition, but again, I'm not sure. This is all developing. It's hard to know what's true as stories like this develop in real time. But and he'll probably not make it, but it'd be crazy to hear him talk about it on the other side.
If he even could. Right. I don't know how you could even speak. Probably hurt just to move your lips after something like that. All right, Chase Geiser in studio. We can continue with this. Or I don't know. Do you have some interesting clips from a Rogan Tucker Carlson interview?
We'll run those at the top of the hour.
We do have those.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Chase Geiser in studio. InfoWars War Room brought to you by InfoWarsStore.com. All right. So we're learning more about the self-immolator here. I know. It's like I used to play on emulators all the time. Now I'm talking about an emulator. I don't know. The guy that lit himself on fire. You know, I'm thinking more about this too. And again, it looks like the crew makes a joke, haha, that he had a burner. He had a burner Reddit account. We're all laughing that he claims to be an anarcho-communist, left unity, named Koo Radley. We're guessing that's a play on Boo Radley. And, but, you know, Chase, I'm kind of trying to think more about this. When an individual, because I kind of have this visceral response to manifestos where when you have a psychotic killer that wants to get attention, writes a manifesto, I'm like, hey, F you.
Right.
You know, like that's my visceral response is, you, no, you're
it's
not.
Engagement farming. You don't get a manifesto. Like, we're not going to read it.
Yeah. You're not going to go out and kill a bunch of people and then get the attention that you want. F you, die in hell. But you know what? I don't know. Maybe a guy that burns himself.
Didn't hurt anybody else.
That's what I'm saying. He didn't. Nobody else got hurt. Maybe reading his manifesto and talking about his manifesto. Because I read the manifesto, but that's what I'm saying. I'm like, I've trained myself where I'm like, I don't want to read. I mean, yeah, okay, let's find out where they were coming from. But it's like, at a certain level, you don't want to give them the attention that they're going for when they commit these heinous crimes.
Right, because other people see that they got the attention, and they're more likely to do the same thing, knowing that after they die, they're likely to get the same viral attention. The problem is, if you don't study why these people do what they really do, then you don't learn from it and you miss the whole point. So Hitler's a perfect example of this. Everyone just writes Hitler off as an evil lunatic, and it certainly was an evil guy. But you don't understand why that happened in civilization unless you read his speeches and understand what was happening among the German people, what the zeitgeist was. And if you don't study that, you can't prevent it from happening again. And that's why I think we're seeing a lot of the same things happen in the 2020s that we saw happen in the 1920s, is because people aren't taught correctly why that whole power thing came out, why World War II broke out and what really happened among the German people. So with these manifestos, how it ties in is, I think, of course, we should read the manifestos and study these people. It doesn't mean that we're justifying what they do or what they say, or that we believe them or that we agree with them. But if you don't understand why these things are happening, then how are you supposed to prevent it in the future? Jordan Peterson, famously talks about the Columbine shooters. He's like, they told us exactly why they did what they did. It wasn't video games. It wasn't bullying. They wrote a manifesto. I admit I haven't read it. But you can look in and see the mindset, the thinking that leads to this level of mental illness that causes this radical, extreme, literally insane behavior, and say, all right, maybe I'm going to stay away from this philosophy because it leads down a dark, dark road. Maybe I'm not going to teach my kids about these ideas and this mentality because it's going to take them down a dark, dark road. And so I think we should study these things. We shouldn't celebrate them, but we should study them.
Well, that's why with these trans shooters, they've been keeping the manifestos secret.
Right.
So normally they'd publish it and they'd use it, call it engagement farming or attention seeking ratings. But with the trans stuff, that they don't want you to see because it's trans violence, right? And you know,
right. They're trying to protect the philosophy behind the trans movement. And
exactly.
Anything that makes it look bad, they don't want to show the public. So this one pops off. Everybody sees it right away. Obviously, it was digital, so they couldn't cover it up as easily as a handwritten diary that was found from the Nashville shooter. But we still don't have the Nashville Manifesto. And I don't know that we ever will.
Well, we have this one. And so I guess it's not as bad if a guy sets himself on fire instead of trying to harm other people
and
kill
other
people.
It's still self-murder.
I still don't like it. It still just makes me feel dirty reading some of this on the air. But, I mean, he did it to himself. He didn't harm other people. And, I mean, look, there's no denying that some of the stuff he talks about in here is curious and, you know, maybe worthy of a discussion, talking about a totalitarian dictatorship that we're all entering, a fascistic world coup. You know, I don't want to set myself on fire to get attention to these issues. That's why I decided to go into political media. He decided to light himself on fire. Unfortunately, probably won't survive it. I mean, he talks about Jeffrey Epstein in here. I do find it interesting to focus on the crypto deal, though. That to me is a little strange. Crypto is optional. I've never been forced to buy a cryptocurrency. Have you?
No, I've never been forced to buy a cryptocurrency. But if we have a CBDC, that is going to be an enforced crypto.
Yes.
Currency. And that's probably what he's talking about. Maybe not everything he says makes sense. I don't know if Peter Thiel really ties into this. Peter Thiel, obviously the famous billionaire, one of the first, if not the first outside investor in Facebook, famously a Republican. Famously brought down Gawker as well. There's a book called Conspiracy by Ryan Holiday about.
And he still is kind of a venture capitalist,
right,
into a lot of right wing stuff.
Right. Apparently. I don't know if he's backed off of the politics. He backed Blake Masters when Blake Masters ran for Senate in Arizona, lost that race. Now Blake Masters is running for Congress. Blake Masters co-wrote his book 0 to 1, which I read when I started my businesses in 2016. So I know who Peter Thiel is, but I don't necessarily think he's a supervillain in the same way that I think of Bill Gates as a supervillain or maybe Zuckerberg. But I don't know. I think this guy, it's like Ted Kaczynski. When you read their work, their manifestos, you understand the problems, the real problems that they outline, and they make sense. It's the solution that doesn't make sense. Also, the solution, you're worried that the world government wants to kill everybody, so your solution is to kill yourself, like we were discussing during the break. It just doesn't, the response doesn't make any sense. But one thing I did find curious, because there were bits and pieces, for example, of the Nashville manifesto. I don't know if it was a manifesto, but just writings from that person that came out. And the spelling errors and grammatical errors that were present there, you could just tell it was just a sloppy thinker. But with Kaczynski or with this manifesto, it seems like really tight. Even if I don't agree with the ideas, the grammar and everything, from what I read, I haven't read the whole thing. This person really thought it out and refined it and polished it in a way.
He could have published it as a book.
Right, right.
I mean, he could have published this as a book and he didn't have to burn himself.
I know. It's tragic. What else can you say?
The individual here also seems to really be a fan of The Simpsons. Brings up multiple Simpsons references. And it's not necessarily the predictions that we always look at The Simpsons, like how do they make these predictions, but really more of a compare and contrast to plot developments from episodes of The Simpsons that we're going through now as well. But I guess you could do that with any show, really.
Yeah. Well, what I'm concerned about is whether they're going to use this to fuel anti-conspiracy theorist thinking. Like, do you think that we're going to see from the media, from the left on social media, the problem with conspiracy theorists, the problem with, they can't use the word right-wing extremist because this guy says he's an anarcho-communist.
Well, that doesn't matter.
They could attack Alex Jones with this and just say, oh, this is what conspiracy theorists are catalyzing among people. This is the type of behavior you get when people like Alex Jones are allowed to say what they want. That's what I'm worried about. And, of course, he doesn't explicitly mention InfoWars or Alex Jones at all in the document, as far as I can tell. But
Zuckerberg mentions Musk. Calls them crypto criminals.
Yeah. Epstein, right, was mentioned too.
I mean, Epstein was in here as well. Here's one I'll read directly. So, I mean, if it gets political at all, I guess this would be the most political it gets. I mean, it goes back into political history. Liberals mock the hypocrisy of conservatives. Conservatives mock the hypocrisy of liberals, and our collective circumstances erode. The left shouts, all cops are bastards, one of the many things they shout, which ensures they'll be hated by the police and the public, and flies in the face of leftist theory. The public's distrust of the government is at an all-time high, but so is the belief that we are helpless to do anything about it. Well, I don't know if that's so much a belief as it is a reality.
Yeah, but the thing is, it seemed almost like he had an optimistic tone that something could be done about it, and bizarrely made the decision that the thing he was going to do about it was burn himself. I guess he got what he wanted. I mean, we're talking about it to thousands of people now.
And like I said, I've just like trained myself. I'm not going to let mass killers and psychotic murderers dictate what I do on the air and force me to read what they want me to read. But I guess... But see, that's the same thing. I don't want to glorify setting yourself on fire either. I don't want to promote that idea either.
There are some people I wouldn't mind if they did it.
Do you want to name them?
No.
Okay.
Too many lawsuits already.
Well, you said it, so. I figured I might as well ask.
I don't know. I have to disagree with you, Owen. Some people can do it.
Okay. Well, I figured I might as well ask since you brought it up. But if you don't want to name names, then I understand. Probably a smart idea for you. All right, I'll tell you what, though. You just went through, Tucker Carlson was on Joe Rogan. Mm-hmm. You just went through a lot of that. We got some interesting clips coming up next. What stuck out from you from that interview?
So 2 hours and 10 minutes in, they start talking about Alex Jones. And Tucker and Joe Rogan both said some really nice things. And Tucker, frankly, just described Alex as prophetic. And I was watching it with Alex while we were eating pizza in the office over there. For the first time, both of us were seeing this clip because Tucker apparently texted Alex and told him about 2 hours and 10 minutes in that he said some nice things about him. And I was like, oh, the headline's got to be Tucker Carlson says Alex Jones is a prophet. And Alex is like, no, don't put that up. Don't put that up. And so we changed it a little bit to make it, because, you know, Alex doesn't like to be perceived as a cult leader or a prophet. He's very humble. And he explains that if you look at what they publish, at their documents, at what they say, if you study the New World Order, they tell you what they're going to do. That's how he was able to do it.
But you know what? I'm going to be interested to play this and maybe respond it on the other side. And thank you for bringing us that clip. And thank you for joining us, Chase Geyser.
End stage of mind control is censorship, right? But it begins long before that. And it begins by creating false categories that wall off your willingness, that prevent you from wanting to know certain things or talk to certain people. And name calling is the most obvious tool. Like, he's a crank. He's a racist. He's a whatever. Fill it in. And then you're like, I can't listen to that person. And I have to say, your willingness to platform or to have a conversation with Alex Jones, I think, was a revolutionary act, actually. Not that everything Alex Jones says is right. It's not. Not everything I say is right, or anyone says is right. But Alex Jones is an interesting person. And even if he's not interesting, he has been walled off from the rest of us through name calling. And your willingness to be like, no, actually, we're just going to listen to Alex Jones and you can decide for yourself.
Well, Alex has been my friend for more than 20 years.
Well, exactly. But you were not allowed to talk to him. And when you hear Alex Jones talk, you may not agree with everything he says. I don't know that I do. But you definitely understand why they told you you couldn't listen to Alex Jones.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I had him as one of the first guests when I came over to Spotify.
Love that.
I was like, let's go.
What did they say?
Well, a lot of people weren't happy. We lost sponsors. It was an issue. But I think it did the job. You know, it regardless of what he said that's incorrect, clearly the Sandy Hook thing was incorrect. You know, Alex, I know Alex personally, so I know what he was going through. And, you know, everybody wants to talk about mental health and they want to praise people for being honest about their mental health issues and support them on their mental health journey to wellness. Alex has gone through some real issues. And one of the reasons why he's gone through some issues is because that guy is uncovering he was drinking out of control, freaking out. And when you see so many lies and so much propaganda and so many psyops that are being done on people, you start seeing them where they don't exist. And that's what he did.
Well, and he's also channeling some stuff. You can't call 9/11 in detail because you're super informed.
Before the fact.
He called it.
Yes.
He literally called it in the summer of 2001. He said planes will fly into the World Trade Centers and they will blame a man called Osama bin Laden. We know that he said that because he said it on tape multiple times. And then he said, call the White House and tell them this. Now, let's just – that's all we know about Alex Jones. Let's just say that's the fact set. How'd that happen?
Right. How did he do that?
He's channeling something.
You think
that's
so?
Super. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
There's like no other. I mean, tell me how he did it otherwise. I've asked him about it. How did you do that at length? He had dinner in my barn recently. We were talking about this. How'd you do that? I don't know. It just came to me. And that's real. That is real. The supernatural is real. And I don't know why it's so hard for the modern mind, I guess because it's a materialist mind, to accept that. But what you see, and that's not a new phenomenon. It's happened throughout history. There are people called prophets, and there are people who were prophets who weren't called prophets, but there are people who have information or parts of information, bits of information, visions of information come to them, and then they relay it. It's not from them. They received it. This is like the, you know, one of the oldest phenomena in human history. So those people tend to be a little crazy, a little unbalanced, a little different from everybody else. Do you know what I mean? They live on locusts and honey in the wilderness. I mean, that's just like they're not like everybody else. And that's clearly part of what – I'm not saying that everything that Alex Jones says is a prophecy from God. It's not. But that was prophetic. And if it wasn't, tell me how it wasn't. In July of 2000 – like I lived in Washington in July of 2001 – you know, my dad worked in the government. Like I was as well informed as anybody could be about what was going on in the government. I've always been interested in what's happening in other countries. I was aware of Osama bin Laden. I knew about the Taliban. I knew, you know, more than most people. There's not one person who was saying, not one person in Washington, D.C. was saying, you know, at some point soon, they may fly airplanes into the World Trade Centers and blame Osama bin Laden. Like that just wasn't a thing. So if you said that multiple times on camera, there's a reason. Like and everyone, I've said this to 50 people, what I just said to you, and they all look at me.
Well, I'll tell you what, I could offer some responses to this. I'm sure Alex will. He's going to be recording some content tomorrow. But there's definitely some interesting stuff in what Tucker is talking about. And then for me working with Alex, knowing Alex, I can add some things too. So maybe we'll expand on that. All right, we're about to be joined by Alex Rosen from Predator Poachers with just some insane news. I'm going to play this video, get his response. I want to briefly respond to that last clip with Tucker and Rogan talking about Alex Jones, and I would imagine Alex is going to offer some follow-up commentary, if not by the end of the night, on band.video and Infowars.com, certainly tomorrow. I know he's going to be in studio tomorrow with a big guest covering some very important geopolitical developments and recording some other content. Now, it's my understanding, I mean, I've seen the tapes that Tucker is referencing, and Alex is actually covering government documents. It was government documents simulating a terror attack. And they said in these documents, this simulation, that it would be Osama bin Laden flying planes into buildings. And Alex, so immersed in this material at the time, you can become immersed in anything and become a master. Whether it's video games or political developments, history, I mean, you name it, dog training. And that's what he was immersed in. And the other day he actually said something that it's like when you watch a movie 100 times and then the 100th time you see something new, it's like that's how you know you're watching a great movie. That's how it is watching Alex. Like he can do a whole show and I'll be like, okay, that is an Alex Jones show. But there'll be one thing he says. It was like that. And he talked about how on his 30th anniversary on air, he talked about how 20 years ago he was so immersed in this stuff. It was like he had just had total master vision. And it resonated with me. But let's talk about this concept of prophecy. Or Alex Jones being a prophet. There's definitely mysticism to our existence. How is it that people have visions? How is it that people have dreams that come true? I mean, literally, you can have a dream and days later, it will happen. I've experienced this. Others have experienced this. So what is that? But there's also just the ability, like a master chess player, to look at pieces on a board, be able to see all the different outcomes, all the different scenarios, have them all play out in your head, and then do a compound analysis of what is the most likely thing to happen. And so I would say Alex probably has a combination of both of those skills, and it's like a crossroads. But that's just my two cents. We'll get Alex's response, I'm sure. Probably, if not tonight, definitely this weekend. Again, he's going to be up here recording stuff. All right. Now, if you like Alex Jones, if you like InfoWars, if you like this show and Harrison Smith in the Morning and Chase Geyser and all our other great guests, like the next one coming on, Alex Rosen, please support us by shopping at InfoWarsStore.com. That's how Alex is able to stay on air. Live, 3 hours a day, sometimes four, doing guest interviews, going on other shows, bringing guests in studio, doing extra content, extra breaking news reports. It's all thanks to your support at InfoWarsStore.com. DNA Force Plus, the flagship supplement, 50% off right now. Turbo Force Plus, Vitamin Mineral Fusion, great drink mixes, 40% off right now. All at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, I'm going to play this video, and Alex Rosen is going to be coming up. Here is Alex Rosen on a pedo bust in Kansas City, and he busts another predator. It's what he does. Some might say he's the best at it. And what happens next is crazy. Here that is in clip 18.
They said they're not taking his phone today because they said they can't seize his phone, even though this guy's on parole. Here, get the officer's badge number. Get the officer's badge number. They're literally letting him go. Get this right now. Get this right now. They're literally letting this guy go. Kansas City Police is letting this sex offender go because they said they can't take his phone, even though he admitted to having child pornography on it. They're just going to let him go. Kansas City Police, make sure you get the cop car on camera. Get the cop car. Kansas City Police is letting this admitted child molester go because we're acting as agents of the state when we have nothing to do with the state. He voluntarily told us this on camera. Kansas City Police right here protects child molesters. Even though St. Louis County prosecutes, Pulaski County prosecutes, Kansas City Police let a child molester go. What's your badge number? What's your badge number? What's your badge number?
Be quiet.
What's your badge number? What's your badge number? What's your badge, officer? What's your badge number? They're letting this child molester go. Look at this. They're letting a child molester go.
We are all right, Alex. So all we have here is that video of you talking to the police officers as they uncuff the man. Give us some context here.
Well, so we have this guy named Scott Allen Ludicky. He's currently a sex offender on parole right now, messaging who we thought was a 13-year-old boy. And we approach him in person. He's on parole for child pornography. He admits to possessing child pornography again, to watching videos as young as diaper age, his own words. And he also admitted to molesting his 8-year-old nephew when he was 16. And he admitted to, like, he was very forthcoming with us. The cops come. He admits it in front of the cops. The cops cuff him, take his phone. Everything is going great. And I was dumb enough to take my mics off because I thought it was going to be just done. And then one of the cops pulls me over and says, since you were acting as an agent of the state, we cannot confiscate his phone. I'm like, that has nothing to do with anything. I wasn't even acting as an agent of the state. That has nothing to do with it. A crime like anything else. So they start uncuffing him, they cut him loose, and luckily they give him a consent form to sign. He actually hands over his phone to them voluntarily, but they let him go with his other phone, and he goes back on Telegram later that night where he had all the child porn.
Okay, so let me get this straight. You're just engaged in another predator bust. Your normal tactics, operating online, you know, posing as minors, this guy picks up contact with you. You're messaging back and forth. You do your bust there. You're filming it all. You're saying everything you just claimed, you have that on film.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. And you tell the police this. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, it's all on film. And, I mean, we have, like, clips ready to show them. And, like, and then so that cop, the guy cop, he pulls me over to the side. and I try to ask for my mic back from the camera guy, and then the cop's like, okay, good luck, I'm not talking to you, and he walks off, and they don't want to say another word to me, and here they are uncuffing him.
Well, certainly this looks bad for the Kansas City Police Department. Have you had any follow-up?
Yeah, so actually, like, a few hours ago, I believe the sergeant at KCPD actually reached out to us, but that's only because, you know, people like you and everybody else put pressure on Twitter, because they're getting blasted there with over 5 million views of that tomfoolery going on.
Why did you make it a point to mention that St. Louis County prosecutes, Pulaski County prosecutes? Why did you want to, why did you say that? Why did you mention that?
Well, because that cop pulled me over, or he pulled me to the side and was like, oh, you were acting as an agent of the state, so we can't even confiscate his phone, which CalPort has nothing to do with me being an agent or not, because I'm not. But we've used that same exact tactic, getting the predator to admit to child pornography in front of the cops in Pulaski County and St. Louis County. And the guy in Pulaski County just got sentenced to 20 years a couple days ago, Timothy Lewis. So it's just a bunch of BS that in the same exact state, like, KCPD can't do anything, but Pulaski and even St. Louis County can.
Well, and this is, of course, St. Louis County different from St. Louis City. Is that Kansas City, not like county, like out in like Blue Springs or anything?
Yeah, no, so that was KCPD, and what we dealt with in St. Louis County was University City PD. So it wasn't like the big city cops, but it was just within the county. But even then, St. Louis County still decided to prosecute, and they're a blue area, so it's not like KC can use that excuse either.
Well, and obviously, I mean, this is not the first time, not even the 100th time, probably closer to the 1,000th time that you've done this. So you've got a little experience in the field dealing with this. But I don't understand here. So what? So if you're witnessing somebody getting mugged or a woman getting raped and you call it in, like, oh, we can't do anything, you're acting as an agent of the state? I mean, how does that apply?
Yeah, exactly. I literally brought up that point to them. I was like, if I filmed a robbery going down and handed you all the footage, you guys would be, oh, thank you, Alex. Thank you so much. What a good citizen. But if I'm filming a literal child molester admitting to possessing child pornography again, then somehow I'm an inconvenience and an agent of the state to them. It makes zero sense. And I guess it only applies to sex crimes, their warped little minds.
How do you know this guy's criminal history?
He mentions it in the chats, and he's like, I don't care if you're underage, like, I still want you. And he, we knew, because he literally said, I went to jail for child pornography to the 13-year-old decoy.
He said this on record?
Yes.
Have you published this tape yet?
The full video, we live streamed it, but it's not out for the public right now, but we'll release it very soon.
All right, and that's going to be at Predator Poachers on Rumble, or are you going to put that up on X as well?
It'll be on both. It'll be on both.
Well, this is – okay, how long of an interaction was this? Because some of your interactions can go for hours. How long was this one?
Less than an hour, actually. I mean, he BS'd on maybe a few things, but, I mean, he was not – he was very forthcoming. Like, for someone on parole, he just kind of, like, gave himself up. I mean, it didn't have to take that long.
Now, as of right now, you've heard back from the – you said that it was the sergeant of the KCPD that reached out to you. Has any other follow-up happened with this?
Yeah, I mean, I just sent him all the evidence we had, and, I mean, I think they're moving pretty swiftly with it because, I mean, they are getting torched on Twitter, and rightfully so.
Yeah, guys, pull up that post from Alex's X account. I wonder how many views that has. When I pulled it in last night, I wasn't even looking, but it was obviously going viral. I mean, that's just insane that it takes pressure from the public for them to act in what you think would be common sense law enforcement here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that we put the foot on the gas. I mean, obviously we can't do this for every single person because, you know, it would get redundant and, you know, people would lose interest. We have to kind of pick and choose when to do this, but I'm glad in this situation we did, because very rarely does it get so egregious that they just release a guy on parole like that so blatantly. I mean, if he was in the next county over, he'd be sitting in a jail cell right now.
Well, I don't want to make any assumptions about the guy's criminal past. I haven't seen the documents on that other than the claims. This has 6.5 million views on X, by the way. But for somebody that's currently on probation myself, I mean, this is how it normally goes. Even if I get pulled over for like a nothing, like maybe my tag has expired or I didn't blinker a turn, if the cops pull me over, they immediately find out I'm on probation and they immediately have all the information about that. And they actually have to send that to my probation officer. Now that doesn't mean necessarily anything is going to happen to me, but if I get pulled over, I think marijuana has been decriminalized in Austin for a certain amount. But if I get pulled over, even with a small amount of marijuana, that would be a violation of my probation, even though it might be a decriminalized offense and just a citation in Austin, they would contact my probation officer and I would probably go to jail. So I'm just a little confused. If this guy's on parole or sitting in some sort of a legal limbo here, the cops had to have known that. I mean, did they search his name?
Yeah, no, we gave his name to the cops. We gave the address to the cops, and that house is a sex offender house. He's not the only sex offender in that house. A lot of them typically group together once they're
what?
Out.
What?
And, yeah, I mean, they knew exactly who he was, what he was, and what he admitted in front of them, and it was just a blatant dereliction of duty, I think.
I'm sorry. Sex offenders search each other out for roommates? Is that what you're telling me now?
Oh, all the time. We had a guy this morning in Park Forest, Illinois, in Cook County, you know, where Chicago is. Even they cuffed him and took him to the station. But KCPD couldn't, by the way. And the guy was using an anonymous name online, but he's like, I live with a roommate. I was like, wait, are you a sex offender? And he's like, yeah. And so, yeah, they do that all the time. That was like, that flipped something in my mind. But yeah, no, they stick together like a lot. They're sick.
Well, I mean, I guess it's hard to find a roommate. In a situation like that.
Yeah, I know. That makes sense.
So it sounds like, are you just going through the Midwest right now with some predators you're exposing?
Yeah, so we started in Coleman, Alabama. We caught this, I think we've caught three people this little trip. All have been sex offenders. This guy wanted to babysit an 8-year-old girl, so he posed as a mom, and we got him with over 1,200 images of child porn. Joseph Cooper, he's locked up in Coleman, Alabama now. Then we got Scott Ludeke in Kansas City the next day. And then today we got a guy named Noah Katula in Park Forest, Illinois. And he's screwed. It's just a long process here in Cook County.
All busts?
Yeah. Yeah, just three for three.
Has your percentage changed? Because I know when you first started doing this, a lot of the times the story would be that nothing would happen. They wouldn't get even detained or arrested. Have your percentages gone up? Would you say that that's a significant pattern there, a trajectory that the percentages are going up?
Oh, yeah. Now we have arrests in 45 states, just most recently in Vermont in February. I mean, we've had arrests in February, but the newest state's been Vermont in February. Convictions in 39, the most recent one being in Delaware. And, yeah, I mean, all three people this trip have been cuffed. Scott's the only one in Kansas City that's been let go. But I got a call from the Coleman, Alabama Sheriff's Department today. And, you know, after going through the guy's phone, they're going to try to put that sex offender, Joseph Cooper, in jail for life. So I'm very excited to hear that.
Well, and for people that don't know this, because it's actually unbelievable, and I learned this from the inside. Drug dealers get treated much more harshly by the criminal justice system than child predators. I mean, known sexual predators and child predators get a much lighter sentencing, much lighter everything from the criminal justice system than drug dealers do. And everybody knows it on the inside, by the way. Everybody in there knows it. And so it's kind of this amazing thing that you see, and I guess you've witnessed this on the street level, just talking to them. I mean, do they talk about that? Do you think that's maybe why it's even so prevalent, why it's so easy for you, because they know that their punishment might be light?
That could play a part in it. I mean, or they've been getting away with it their whole life. But, I mean, all these sex offenders that we caught, I mean, they're obviously out of jail right now, and they're just going back doing the same thing. I wish Scott had weed on him yesterday, because maybe he'd be in jail right now. Too bad he had child porn.
I think, isn't weed legal in Missouri, though, now? I think it's legal.
Oh, it might. I mean, if he had, like, any other drug, I mean, you know, he's lucky he had infants being raped rather than that.
Yeah, oh boy, I'm glad all I had was that on my phone and not some weed in my pocket. But really, that's what it's like. And everybody inside the system knows it.
Yeah, no, that is literally the case. They're very easy on them, and oftentimes they get paroled. I mean, literally, this guy was on parole. I mean, they get cut loose so easily. It's unbelievable.
Those are the types of people that you probably should have off the streets, more so than even a drug dealer, I would say, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, they do more to ruin kids' lives than drug dealers do. I mean, both do, but, you know, it's, you know, pick and choose.
Well, okay. I mean, this is just incredible stuff. That video has been seen 6.5 million times, and because of that, I guess the Kansas City police are going to have to take some action here. It's wild to think that that he was cut loose that day, but there it is on film. What's next for the Predator Poacher? Where do you go next? What do you got on your radar?
Well, we're hopefully going to do a guy in Wisconsin tonight. We'll see how long Cook County wants to keep us here. So I got some news for y'all, which I didn't even know. So this isn't even only for Predator stuff, but for those who know Cook County, that's where Chicago is. Every felony that they think is committed, they send a team from the prosecutor's office down to investigate if a felony occurred or not. So in most county, I mean, every other county in the country, I think, if there's a felony, there's like probable cause to arrest, it happens. But Cook County's like, wait, don't arrest yet. They send somebody from the prosecutor's office down to determine like if a crime occurred. It's a very long process. They don't like getting people arrested here too much. It's tough. We've been at the PD since like 8:30 in the morning, and it's already 4:30 in the afternoon. Like, I'm just here right now, just in the core.
That's insane. And meanwhile, I don't have any felony offenses, never have, and yet they treat me like like the highest level felon that you possibly could. It's crazy. I mean, I don't want to put anybody on blast, but let's just say everybody that's dealt with my case basically is like, what? Why are you here? What are you dealing with? So it's pretty wild. But yeah, I guess in Chicago they don't really like putting criminals in jail, huh?
No, like the detectives were telling us, is this city that we're in, Park Forest? It's like in part Will County and part Cook County, Illinois. And they were like, if you were just a mile down the road in our city, then you could have already been like left by now, and everything would have been smoother. But like, it's such a process. There has to be somebody. So somebody's coming down like an hour from Chicago to come investigate this further. It's really just an insane process. And just think, the county's so big, they do this for every felony.
And I guess, so what? Are they going to want to see the evidence you have on your phone?
Yeah, they're going to see that. They're going to see the video. They're going to interview us again. Even the detectives interviewed us already. They're going to interview the chomo we caught. It's going to be like it's a very redundant process. I mean, it's a great use of taxpayer money, in my opinion. It's unbelievable.
Okay. Hey, by the way, before we let you go, what, I mean, there's a couple guys that do what you do. Everybody kind of has their different tact, if you will. No mm-hmm. doubt, as a young man, I think you're like 23 or 24.
24 now, yeah.
24. You've kind of risen to prominence in the, let's say, to catch a predator game. What's the guy's name? I just saw it recently. He busts predators online, but now he shows up and he gives them boxing gloves and he just fights them. Have you seen this guy? Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, Vitaly.
Vitaly. What do you think about that method?
Well, I mean, dude, I just think, like, these people are all getting let loose. And, yeah, of course I want to punch them in the face. I mean, you know, when I hear, like, yeah, I sucked off my eight-year-old nephew, like, of course I want to murder these people. But, like, dude, just imagine Vitaly's probably caught a few people like that, and then he beats them up for 10 minutes and lets them go. I mean, if I was – I would rather get beat up for 10 minutes than even go to jail overnight for a DUI. So, like, I mean, it looks good, but I think it's really counterproductive. I mean – I just can't imagine, like, some of these sick people that we've caught with all these images, all these victims, just getting let go after getting beat up for a few minutes. I mean, I couldn't live with that, so I don't agree with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's humiliating, and maybe he thinks it's better than dealing with the law enforcement because they won't do anything. But no, you're a big red teddy bear. You would never harm a fly. You don't want to hurt anybody. Right. You don't engage in any violence.
Right, right. I am the MLK of predator catching.
Okay. All right. That's good. The peaceful predator poacher. But yeah, I saw a couple of those videos where he gives him boxing gloves. He's like, all right, I'm just going to beat you up here in the streets. because you're a predator. And I'm like, well, I guess if nothing's going to happen to him in the justice system, maybe a fat lip. But the funny thing is, they deal with these people. Chomo's in prison. Well, they're getting their ass kicked in prison, too. So, I mean, that's a whole nother story. All right, Alex Rosen, Predator Poachers, thanks for joining us. If there's any other updates, let me know.
Thank you so much. Talk soon.
All right, there he goes. The MLK of To Catch a Predator. You heard it right here. The Martin Luther King of Catching Predators. It's a little more pasty. The only difference. All right, joining me now is Brianna Morello. We got a bunch of things to talk about. Senator Mike Lee is on the floor of Congress warning about this FISA bill that's about to pass and how it's going to be used to illegally spy on every American citizen. And now any business that has a Wi-Fi connection is going to be also asked by the U.S. government to spy on citizens. But first, let's get into this betrayal by Mike Johnson. And there's really no other way to put it. He's done this to himself. He's the one, when he first became speaker, saying, we're not going to, you know, fund all these wars unlimitedly. We're going to do something about the southern border. If you do want foreign aid, we're going to have to tie it to border security. And then, obviously, none of that's happened. He's completely reversed his message. And so, Brianna, I know you've been digging into this and talking to members of Congress about this. How do you try to codify and explain Mike Johnson's betrayal?
Pretty incredible, because it's just been about 6 months since he took over the speakership, and it's probably the fastest turnaround I've ever witnessed. I know many others. It's disturbing. Most people, most members of Congress and their staffers will tell you that Mike Johnson's office is awful from the ground up. They are the worst group of staffers that are currently in Congress, including Democrats. But ultimately here, I think a lot of people are concerned that Speaker Johnson has completely gone down the wrong path. I spoke with Chairman Jim Jordan just last week, and I asked him about it, and he, you know, said he's a friend of mine, but he's also making some decisions that he doesn't agree with. And other members of Congress are now being vocal and saying that this isn't the speaker that they voted for. And so it has a lot of us scratching our heads, wondering why all of a sudden he has made this quick turnaround. You know, he came into the speakership role by saying he saw, you know, the world through the lens of the Bible. He also reminded us all that he's a constitutional attorney. And so we were all pretty excited to see him land the gavel, but he has been a complete disappointment. Now, Breitbart's been doing some incredible digging into all of this because, well, they're wondering why he's changed, and they went and looked into his team of staffers who he's surrounded by. And some of his top officials have either questionable backgrounds or they're just rhinos. We'll go with the first one who they called out. It was Dan Ziegler. He is somebody who just recently came into the office, the speakership office, and he is now the policy director. Now, interesting enough, his background beforehand, he actually worked for a lobbyist. Oh, he was a lobbyist for a lobbying company, though. He and one of the companies that he represented was Pfizer. So that's that. Now his office, Speaker Johnson's office, has not yet commented on any of this because, well, why would they put this individual in such a high position for policy director? It's a big deal. You don't really want a lobbyist in that. But they have not responded. And it's not just him. It is also a woman named Hannah Freyer. She is somebody who now is sitting at the director of operations role. Interesting enough, she's a never Trumper. And we know this because, well, she wrote, there's a young Republican group in D.C., and she sent them an email after they backed and endorsed President Donald Trump for the presidency. And she asked for her dues back. She didn't want to keep paying into her membership. When they told her that they weren't going to do that, there was no refunds. There was a couple of curse words exchanged between the two, and Breitbart got their hands on those emails. So those are the people who are kind of leading Speaker Johnson right now. And so it's obvious that he doesn't really have a grip on the current issues at hand. But, you know, we heard him say last week, when it came to FISA, when it came to Ukraine, he suddenly has had a change in opinions because, well, he just sees things differently now. During FISA, he actually said that he spoke with members of the intel community, and they changed his perspective on everything after he witnessed what he witnessed. But it's not just FISA that's the part that's really upsetting a lot of people. It's the fact that it's warrantless, and that's what he supported. He was a tiebreaker in that. And he's a constitutional attorney. He knows damn right that the U.S. Constitution, the Fourth Amendment, says that you have to get a warrant. And so there was no reason for him to push this forward and sponsor it. And for some reason, he's doing just that. Now, I've called his office. I've emailed his office several times. They don't want to get back to us. But it's clear we have lost our speaker. And I don't see difference between him and possibly a Democrat taking on that position at this point.
Yeah, and maybe we get wonky with strategy or the issue of removing him or not. But it's not just the FISA. I mean, that's one of many black eyes that he has now as policy when it comes to his role as speaker. He said he wouldn't fund any more foreign aid unless we secured the border. Well, the border's not secure. They're going to pass this $100 bill. It's a $100 billion bill. It's going to pass tomorrow. I don't see anybody stopping it. But also, I mean, I'm sure you've seen the developments today. The Democrats have basically conquered Congress. There is no pushback. Even with Republicans with the majority in the House, Chuck Schumer just changed the entire rules that, oh, you voted for impeachment. Too bad. We're not going to do it. You had Republicans voting with the Democrats in the Rules Committee to change the rules today. I mean, this is a uniparty dictatorship now. So it's like even if we get Republicans in there that want to do something, Chuck Schumer now owns everything.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they've set it up. They set it up so perfectly, honestly, Owen. We have nobody to blame but ourselves at this point. We continue to just say that we have to work with the other side. We shouldn't be working with the other side. They're not our friends. They're not our fellow Americans who authentically care for our country. They are our enemies. And I don't mean that to just kind of pivot and put everyone up against each other. I think that's not the point of it. It's the reality. Right now, we have people in leadership who should not be there because, well, they are not advocating for the will of the American people. And that's exactly what's going on right now with Chuck Schumer. I find it laughable that they didn't even really put the Mayorkas trial on. They were just kind of like, we're not doing that. And they can't because there's not going to be much in the way of pushback from Republicans. They just allow it to happen. And the Mayorkas impeachment itself was just a PR stunt for Republicans to pretend like they're actually doing something. But we know they really don't care for the border issue. They don't really advocate for our borders to be protected like how they should be. It's something that gets them in elections. They could sit there and advocate for it on the ballot and keep pushing people in because it's an emotional issue for so many. So they don't really want to resolve the issue. And that goes for both sides. So it's really no surprise here that we're witnessing this right now firsthand. Chuck Schumer just seems to be controlling both the House and the Senate. Yep. And it's quite impressive because really he's not getting much in the way of pushback.
No, not at all. I mean, he has Mitch McConnell on a leash. And yeah. I mean, and this is how Senator Mike Lee said it. But I guess this is really the ultimate question, isn't it? What was Mike Johnson shown in that skiff that made him completely owned and operated by the Democrats and the Uniparty? That's kind of that's the pivotal moment here. I mean, that's when the Rubicon changed.
Yeah. Well, I asked members of Congress when I was there in D.C. last week, and I asked them specifically, what have you witnessed? Have you seen anything that kind of validates what Johnson's saying? And they just shook their head. I had one person just shake their head and just look down because they don't actually believe what he's saying. They don't actually believe he witnessed something that validated pushing forward warrantless searches of Americans' devices and surveilling them. This whole funding, all this nonsense, but not funding our own border. They don't understand what's going on here. Or that they do, they just can't publicly say it at this point. But they're very discouraged. I think everyone's discouraged just witnessing it. And so we'll see how it plays out. I just don't see this going well for the speaker. This isn't what we bargained for when we thought we were getting rid of Kevin McCarthy. Some people are actually saying, too, that Kevin McCarthy really wasn't that bad, and we might have been better off with him still with the gavel. I don't know. That's debatable, though.
Well, maybe we'll have that debate on the other side. Let's save that debate for the other side. I think what is unfortunate about the developments today is the guy that sets himself on fire outside of the courtroom has really played a nice, perfect distraction for what went down in Congress in the last 24 hours and what's about to happen tomorrow. $100 billion foreign aid bill, no border security. It's literally called a national security bill. And there's not a penny for the U.S. border. You have the Republicans and the Democrats agreeing to rewrite the rules on proceedings. So it basically takes any power away when it comes to checks and balances from the House. I mean, it's really just stunning, but everybody's looking at the guy that lit himself on fire. I mean, I guess you can't blame him. Brianna Morella is my guest. Let's have that debate on the other side. Are we better off with Kevin McCarthy? Should we get rid of Mike Johnson? I mean, would it even make a difference if it was a Democrat in there? Matt Gaetz is actually commenting about that today. Maybe we'll play some of that clip, too. We take a short break. We'll be right back. All right. I want to play a little clip here from Matt Gaetz's podcast. We'll get Brianna Morello's response to this, the debate about do we vacate Mike Johnson? Does it make a difference? Here's Matt Gaetz commenting on this.
Okay, so here's my perspective on the motion to vacate. When I filed the motion to vacate, I thought, wargamed, strategized about how a four-seat Republican majority would then reelect another speaker, because it's not enough to have the votes to remove somebody. You have to actually replace them with somebody else. And I really, really took great care to promise this audience and the entire country that under no circumstance would there be a Democrat Speaker of the House. I knew there might have been a few that maybe a little iffy. Would they vote for maybe a Josh Gottheimer-style Democrat or a Trone-style Democrat? But indeed, I did not believe that the prisoner's dilemma of a four-seat majority would allow five or six to be able to break off together, that wouldn't be available. But here is what I regret to inform you. I do believe in a one-seat majority, there could be one or two or three of my colleagues who would take a bribe in one form or another in order to deprive the Republicans of a majority at all. And let me tell you what a Democrat speaker looks like. Their leadoff hitter will be declaring Donald Trump an insurrectionist and setting up a barrier to him being able to become the president of the United States if he is lawfully and legally elected, as I expect he will be. That'll be their leadoff hitter. And then the chaser to that shot will be a massive spending package that looks a lot more like the American Rescue Plan. They will blow past every concept of every cap ever imagined. You'll be looking at universal basic income. You could be looking at packing the Supreme Court. And so the risk that one or two of my corrupt Republican colleagues might take a bribe, take a walk, feign an ailment, and flip this thing to the Democrats is a risk that is too high for me at this time. But Anna, I want to hand it to you.
Yeah, I'm just going to tell you directly on what we're hearing right now. So I'm just going to tell them.
Yeah.
So I heard that if and when the motion to vacate is introduced, that there will be immediate resignations of a couple of more moderate members of Congress. And in the event that that happens, that ultimately means it does go to a Democrat speaker. And so we're in a predicament. I do not like or support what Mike Johnson has doing, and I think that he has absolutely gone back on what he promised us. But at this time, that is, no kidding, a possibility. And as a result of that, I'm hoping that that does not move forward.
Andy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree with both of you. I think the timing of...
All right. I think that lays it out pretty good here. Brandon Morella, our guest. Well, I mean, that lays it out. So basically, the Republicans are in check. They are now in check as far as the House is concerned. And it's a worse position. Now, I want to be clear. I still would say it was good to vacate Speaker McCarthy as a precedent-setting moment and as a message to future Republicans that we're not playing games anymore. When you come into the House as a Republican, and if you want to be the leader, if you want to be the Speaker as a Republican, you actually have to get things done. We want policy results. We don't want lip service. We want policy results. We want commitment to right-wing values. And if you don't do that, you're going to be vacated. But as Matt Gaetz just laid it out, I mean, they're in check. There's nothing they can do. And we have such corruption. He even says it. The Republicans are corrupt, too. They'll take bribes.
Yeah. Yeah, they will. I wanted to remind your audience, too. Congressman Michael Gallagher, today is his last day in Congress. He is the Republican who is resigning, and he waited until the 19th of this month because, well, now his seat can't be replaced because he waited till the 19th. If he left prior, he would have been able to have that seat replaced. But now that he's stepping down on this specific date, they can't replace him until after November.
So just outright sabotage.
And here's where I'm getting with that. So when I was in D.C. too, I met with a couple of people, and I was informed, and I tried reaching out to him, I texted him, I emailed his office. I was informed that Congressman Gallagher has a job lined up, allegedly. I asked him specifically about that job, and he would not respond. He's somebody who loves being on TV, though. I know that from my days at Fox. He would actually ask us to connect him with Maria Bartiromo, and he always wanted to be on Maria Bartiromo's show. And so he's always somebody who want to get in front of the camera and answer questions. But now suddenly he's completely different. He's the one, in case you want to recall, the one who pushed that TikTok ban bill. That was him. He actually had a chairman seat on one of the higher up committees, and he suddenly stepped away from it. And now they're saying, oh, it's death threat. That's the reason why he's stepping away. But I'm pretty sure with what Congressman Matt Gaetz is alluding to is exactly what happened with Gallagher. He just won't confirm it. We'll find out soon, though, if he lands in the private sector. I'm sure it'll probably be the lobbying firm or something of that nature. But, Kevin McCarthy was another one who sold us out. Even though he lost his speakership, you know, if he really loved the country, he would have stayed in his seat, but he chose not to, and he left, and we lost another seat. And they're not the only ones. I think there's three others who also stepped down. So there's something going on where there's someone whispering in their ears and telling them to step down, and they'll have a nice cushy job afterwards, and they're listening. And so when Congressman Matt Gaetz is telling you that there's a bribe issue here, it's likely he knows more than he's leading on, and that's the reason why he has to lightly put it that way. I'm deeply concerned. I don't really support the motion to vacate right now because it is a really scary time. I know, you know, we have a speaker right now who you really can't tell difference with whether he's conservative or a Democrat. But I would say that I say it's a really, really high risk move. I highly respect Congressman Thomas Massie, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and then Paul Gosar also just signed off on this as well. They're all co-sponsoring it. But I don't think we should honestly take that gamble as of right now.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Gaetz kind of lays it out. What would be the difference if it was a speaker? Well, maybe nothing in policy as far as this session is concerned, but the Democrats will actually abuse the powers they have in the House to stop Trump from getting elected. And then they can chair some of these committees like the Judiciary Committee and the Oversight Committee. But they got them in check. They really have us in check with Mike Johnson. So I guess we just have to sit here and get slashed in the throat and just say, well, it's better than having our head cut off. So I guess those are our two options now with Speaker Mike Johnson. But it just shows how corrupt D.C. is, truly. It just shows how corrupt it is. It's really sad that we have to witness this. But nobody's really talking about how Chuck Schumer and the Republican-led Rules Committee have just completely erased the checks and balances and the balances of power when it comes to Congress. I mean, the uniparty has truly taken over with Mike Johnson as Speaker.
Yeah, it has. It has. And there's really no surprise to it at all. Honestly, we've been watching them chip away at all the checks and balances throughout our government. And so there's really no shocker here. And it's been kind of hush hush. No one's really talking about it, like you mentioned, Owen. I'm not surprised. I think this is all preparation for November in case President Trump does make his way back into the White House. They're going to try to stop it anyway. They can. And so they've got to nip away at the conservative majority in the House, get rid of Republicans, get rid of all the rules in the Senate. And it's they're setting us up intentionally to fail. I mean, this is their big plan. If he's not going to be arrested and thrown in prison for the rest of his life, they've got to come up with a plan B, and that's what this is going to be for them. I strongly believe that. I do. I am deeply concerned too, because no one's pushing back. I mean, literally, Owen, I think you're the only person I've heard talk about this, what took place. And I'm just concerned that most Americans are paying attention. Like you said, there was a guy who lit himself on fire today in Manhattan, and it was a great distractor for many of these people because, well, it took away from the fact about the jury, all these corrupt individuals who probably should never be sitting on a jury in the first place because they're so obviously partisan, but they're going to make their way onto the jury. They've got a judge who's just equally as partisan, even, I guess, I'd argue even more. And we've got a corrupt DA, but nobody wants you to pay attention to that. They just want the headlines, and they're trying to distract everyone, unfortunately. It's really heartbreaking in itself.
Yeah, they got this deranged. I've been watching more CNN and MSNBC lately just to see how they're covering the Trump trial. And I warned my audience, actually, that, I mean, the left is being set up for a psychotic break. They're actually worse now than they were in 2015, 16, and 17 with their Trump derangement syndrome. It's truly a spectacle. I mean, even the way that juror was talking to the media, we've got the clip. But yeah, I mean, the person, I mean, what satanic ritual, what sacrifice did the Democrats burn at the stake to get that perfect distraction? And I guess the Republicans too, to get that perfect distraction from the uniparty conquering D.C. today?
They're really really good at this. They're really good at pivoting and moving the news cycle. And that's what I always tell people to focus on. Because, well, when a story like this pops up, they're intentionally trying to divert your attention to something else. And they're masters at that. The mainstream media allows them to do so. You know, I used to sit in these editorial calls and they'd pitch the craziest stories. And I would always wonder why. We've got another story that probably most Americans care about more. And for some reason, we can't talk about that. We've got to focus on other things. So it's a distraction, but it's well orchestrated. I know, you know, Lara Logan's another one who talks about it all the time, about how the intel community.
Well, makes you and her have both seen the inside. And so thank you for joining us for the Brianna Morella Show. You can find her on X. Crazy stuff, Brianna. Thanks for joining us. Okay. The Democrats are obviously freaking out about RFK Jr., and it's now proven, as they've bought the rest of the family out to promote Biden. And so I wouldn't believe the theory that RFK Jr. is more of a threat to Trump. And I think the recent developments here are proof. First, let's go to clip 20. RFK Jr. family endorses Biden. This is on stage during the rally. They're all up there cheering. Biden is lost and dazed and confused.
Thank you, John, for those inspiring words. My name is Carrie Kennedy, and I am the seventh child of Robert and Ethel Kennedy. I'm joined here today with my sisters, Kathleen and Rory, with Joe and Chris and Max. And with my hero, President Joe Biden.
Her hero. That's interesting. It's a full court press on this. They also cut a campaign ad for Joe Biden. Here that is in clip 23.
My name is Joe Kennedy.
I'm Carrie Kennedy.
Rory Kennedy.
Kathleen Kennedy Townsend.
Chris Kennedy.
And I'm here to proudly endorse Joe Biden.
Joe Biden.
They brought him back.
Our future is on the ballot in a way in which we haven't seen in generations.
The only way to win this election is for everybody to go out and vote for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
When I think of modern politicians in our country in this century, I think Joe Biden is the RFK of his generation.
Believes in democracy, believes in human rights, believes in the freedoms.
This is a president who embodies the Kennedy legacy.
This is not going to go well for them. But like I said, it's a full court press. Now you thought that was bad? Watch what happens when RFK Jr. goes live on CNN after the Biden rally, or rather before the Biden rally, actually, in Philadelphia. You want to talk about a train wreck? Check this one out in clip 29.
Right. Leader for us. He stood with the United Auto Workers. He's a man we can trust and who carries forth Bobby Kennedy's values and John Kennedy's values.
As you know, Kerry, the Biden campaign is concerned that your brother will potentially take votes away from President Biden in some of the very key and close swing states. Are you concerned that your brother will play potentially a spoiler role in this election?
You know, I think we all know this is going to be a very, very close election. So the only way Biden will win is everybody comes out and votes. That's the way Biden wins. So we need everybody to come and vote. Vote for President Biden. You vote for somebody else, that's a vote for Trump. Don't do that. Vote for Biden.
Okay, that went well. Wolf Blitzer is like, because they keep him on the screen, like, when are we going to cut? When are we going to cut? When are we going to cut? Colon, can we go back there quickly, guys, to the end of that? Is there any way we can just, I mean, that is just crazy. They sounds like a mental asylum.
That's the way Biden wins. So we need everybody to come and vote. Vote for President Biden. If you vote for somebody else, that's a vote for Trump. Don't do that. Vote for
I mean, that's about, if you could just have a moment to encapsulate the Kennedy family endorsement of Joe Biden, that's it right there. At the Biden rally where nobody's at. And all you can hear in the background, psychotic liberal screaming. All right. Let's go. Yeah, Wolf. I'm with you. Let's go quickly. Maybe Joe Biden can save the day, guys. Here, Joe Biden, save the day. Give us a clippable moment in clip 19.
I see a future of the planet. We save the planet, as this guy's busting his neck doing, from climate change. Literally. Climate crisis in America.
He's literally busted his neck, and he sees a future with a planet. Thank you, Joe. Now, insert psychotic liberal screaming in the background as we go to break. All right, you want to talk about a story that is not getting anywhere near the attention it deserves. This has really been such a letdown, and we've had Carbon Mike on, Dexter Taylor. We had him on before his first hearing, and now he sits in Rikers Island awaiting sentencing. A non-violent man with no criminal history and no victims. Why? Because he had guns that the government didn't know about. But that's strange because somehow they did know about it. So this, I mean, where is the NRA? Hold on. Let me just shut up and bring his lawyer on. Vino Varghese joins us yet again here on the show, the lawyer for Dexter. And I don't know where to begin here. Is it the Second Amendment violations? Is it just to get your update from the court hearing? I know you don't want to get too political. You're defending your client, obviously. Is it the lack of support from conservative media, the NRA, other groups? Let's just start with the basics. Tell us the update, the charges, how court went, and now obviously Dexter sitting in Rikers Island. Can you talk to him? What is going on?
So I saw Dexter in person yesterday morning, just to let you know. And thanks for having me on and inviting me on. And certainly everything you just said, all of the above, is what I would say in relation to the questions or the points you brought out. So Tuesday at around 5:35, 40 p.m., we got the verdict. Unfortunately, the jury was only out a couple of hours. We weren't allowed to argue Second Amendment. We weren't allowed to present it as a defense. The judge said repeatedly throughout the trial, before the trial began, and at times during the trial, and sometimes directly to the jury, said the Second Amendment does not apply here in this courtroom. We're here to follow New York state law. And so she effectively cut our legs. We anticipated losing here, just to be frank with you. And this is why Dexter is a unicorn, one of the most extraordinary, perhaps the most extraordinary person I've ever met, certainly the most extraordinary person I've come across in my 25 years as a lawyer, is that he was willing or is willing to go to prison for a number of years to hopefully get a shot at winning. And the only place that he has a shot at winning, a realistic shot at winning, is in federal court. But to get to federal court, we have to lose at each of the state court levels. So he was a champ. He's a warrior. He had told me, don't worry, as the judge was cutting off my legs and threatening my law license for trying to bring in the Second Amendment. He said, look, we knew the fix was in. We're going to keep fighting. It's only just beginning. And, you know, he's been an inspiration to me. And my hope is that, you know, Owen and, you know, people like you bring this out in the forefront. I've done a number of these podcasts over the last couple of days, and I'm going to be willing to do more to shed light on this case.
Well, I'm waiting for the day you get invited on the biggest rated network, and that's Fox News. I'm yet to see you on there. I hope that that invitation comes before long.
Yeah, so just on that front, I'm a legal commentator, so I comment on all the – I'm a free agent. I comment on all the major news. I've been on Laura Ingraham's show. I've been on Tucker Carlson's show. I've tried to reach out back channel to them. I know Tucker Carlson's lawyer, and look, we've put this out there. I will say this. One of the responses I got is they don't like to do stuff Newsmax done. So we were on Newsmax 2 weeks ago, and that seems to be a greater concern than bringing light to this case, which is really affects everyone.
Well, I mean, that's interesting because Fox and Newsmax are about to be tied into something, which, again, I'm surprised this story hasn't gone viral yet. I'm just not going to break it. You may be aware of something that's tying those two news networks together that I happen to know about as well. You as a lawyer might have heard about that, but if not, you will soon. But I don't want to deflect here, but there's going to be some very interesting news coming out soon about maybe some other legal issues that Fox and Newsmax might have in common. But hold on. Let's go back. Record scratch. How does the Second Amendment not apply in a New York courtroom?
So when the Bruin decision came out 2 years ago and invalidated the licensing structure of New York State. So prior to Bruin in 2022, which was decided basically within weeks after Dexter was arrested in April of 2022, it was May 2022, it was a few weeks after Dexter's arrest. What it said was that New York's licensing regime, which required this showing of a just cause or basically a really compelling reason to get a firearm, was unconstitutional and violated the Second Amendment. What New York did in response was thumb their noses at the U.S. Supreme Court. Kathy Hochul went on calling this a terrible decision. Mayor Adams said that, you know, these radicals on this U.S. Supreme Court have endangered the lives of New Yorkers. And, you know, a lot of rhetoric, a lot of talk. And mind you, right, I'm a criminal defense lawyer who has to deal with constitutional issues. So we knew. So what happened was they created this new thing called, you know, good moral standing or good moral quality of this amorphous, vague concept that now replaces, you know, necessity as a criteria. Well, who gets to decide this? Some guy who couldn't cut it on the streets of the NYPD, sitting in an office, this guy came and testified. One of the people that decides and passes on. So good moral character. I mean, think about how subjective that is. And it's not just passing a background check, not just passing a mental health background check. That's before you get to good moral character. So what's good moral character? The guy couldn't define it. He just says, I approve some, and it was so arbitrary. And he couldn't tell me how many people were approved in those years. So in response, so there was a legislative response from the governor and the mayor, really from the governor and this passing, this changing it slightly, but basically it's the same thing. What the NYPD did was basically not approve applications, and we showed that. So we were able to get, I subpoenaed records through basically the equivalent of a subpoena, which is a Freedom of Information Act request. I FOIA'd, depending on how you want to call it, the NYPD. It took like 8 or 9 months to get the records. But we showed that in the years, 2 years they were investigating Dexter, which was 2021 and 2022. In 2021, they only approved 19% of applications. In 2022, post-Bruin, they only approved 4% of applications. And why was this important? Because judges, they're given what's called a bench brief, basically a cut and paste job to reject claims of constitutionality or constitutional claims by defendants. What makes Dexter's case unique is that all these other defendants in New York State who were filing these Bruin motions before we did ours were getting rejected because the judges were saying, well, they never applied for a license. They didn't have the data. We were the only people, the only single defendant, the only defense team to actually get the data and showed it would have been useless to apply because it's almost impossible to get a gun license in New York, particularly in New York City. So that took away their argument because they were just rejecting these constitutional claims on procedural grounds. You don't even get to whether this is a real constitutional issue because they were just rejecting them. So,
but do New York State judges? But do New York State judges, or I mean, prosecuting attorneys, do they not take an oath to the Constitution?
They do. They do. I was a prosecutor from 2000 to 2006 in that same office that prosecuted Dexter. And we take an oath to the Constitution of the United States and to the Constitution of New York State. And New York State is a similar you know, a provision to the Second Amendment, but it's just, you know.
I mean, this is just more evidence that New York is just completely conquered by the un-American Democrat Party. There is no Second Amendment. Obviously, what they're doing to Trump. I mean, this is a loud and clear message right now that's being sent by the New York Democrats. The Bill of Rights does not apply here. And we can politically persecute anybody we want.
The problem with New York, and again, this isn't, I'm not here to try to make a political statement. I'll leave that to you guys to do. I'm here to speak about the legality, but the practical implications of the Democratic Party is that in New York City, it's a one-party system. There is no real Republican Party at all.
Well, it's about to be like that on a nationwide level. That's the message we got today.
In New York, it's New York State as a whole. A little bit stronger. There's parts of it that have it, but in New York City, it's a one-party system. So the judges, that it's actually the Democratic parties at each county level, five boroughs, five counties of New York City, that determine who gets to be judges. So the Democratic Party of each borough. So I here in Manhattan, my office, the case was in Brooklyn, but the Manhattan Democratic Party and the Brooklyn Democratic Party get to decide who gets to be a judge and who they put on a platform, who goes either for election or gets appointed.
Well, don't they usually run unopposed too?
Correct. So what happens is they go through a nomination process, so they fight amongst themselves, and then they choose, okay, this person is most highly qualified, and then they submit those names, and then they choose, and they pick one or two for positions, depending on what positions are open throughout the city. Now, that's for the elected positions. For the appointed positions, they go through a mayor's committee, or the governor gets to appoint through what's called the court of claims, and they get to decide. So either way, you're only getting one party choosing the judges. Primarily in all over New York State, but particularly in New York City.
Well, this isn't rhetoric. They said it. The Bill of Rights does not apply in a New York courtroom. They've announced it. That's not me saying that. That's not rhetoric. That's literally what they've announced. And even though they take an oath to the Constitution, somehow that just doesn't apply here. Now, when I hear you talk about, and let's talk about the current state of the case, obviously the hearing coming up a month from today, Dexter sitting in prison, even though he's a nonviolent criminal, there's no victims, and yet he has to sit in Rikers Island, one of the worst prisons you can be in. When I hear you talking about this process that you're going through and how you knew the whole thing would be rigged and everything, it's like, only because I've been there, it's like listening to somebody tell my own story. And so how much, and again, I know you're still in the defense case here. I don't want you to say anything that might harm your defense, but I mean, How do you explain that to people? I've tried to explain it. How do you explain that? If you choose not to comment, I can move on. But how do you explain that you're sitting in a courtroom and you realize there is no justice in here, that justice never came into the picture?
So let me just say this a little bit about me and my experience. I've been a lawyer for 25 years. I've been exclusively in criminal law, first 6 years as a prosecutor, the last 18 to 19 years as a criminal defense lawyer. I practice in federal courts all over the country. And the thing about federal court is that no matter whether you're in Louisiana, New York, California, it's the same code, United States code, and the federal rules of evidence are the same. So when I practice in other federal courts, I don't need a local guy here. Now, primarily in state court where I am is New York. Occasionally, I'll go into state court another place, but I'll have a local guy for procedure. The problem here in New York is that the judges were given a bench brief. So they're told, you know, how to respond to these arguments. And so I know this. I mentioned that for Dexter, the only place he's going to potentially get relief, and we think we have a real shot at getting out, is in federal court, but he's got to sit in state court for several years before we get to that position. And he's willing to do it. He knew it, and he was willing to do it, and that's what makes him a champ. So after sentencing, this judge is going to make an example out of him. Is going to sentence him, I believe, to at least 10 years.
My God.
If we get less than that, that'll be a miracle. But he's going to be incarcerated then we're going to lose, 100% lose, in the intermediate appellate court, which also sits in Brooklyn.
And this is just so people understand, too. Like, you're just going through the basic levels of this. Like, there's no way you can skip right to the Supreme Court here. You have to go through all these levels.
Correct. So in order to get to federal court, to file a habeas motion in federal court, if the case comes from state court, you have to exhaust all your state court appeals. So there's a trial court, which we were in, which we pretty much knew we were going to lose. We definitely knew we were going to lose when she precluded us from arguing Second Amendment. I mean, look, we made some references to it, but she kept jumping in. She interrupted me. She interrupted my opening to call me in the back to tell me that, you know, you're creating a problem without identifying anything I said that was objectionable. So, I mean, I wanted to say, look, and Dexter was look, I'm a warrior, but I got to be able to fight. And to not even really be able to fight was bothering me. And Dexter was like, dude, you know, brother, we knew this was going to happen. Just, you know, keep, he was telling me to keep my chin up. And so, you know, we fought like banshees. And Dexter took the stand and he was able to get out that he had a license to make and produce firearms. It was called the Constitution. And so, you know, they got upset and there were numerous times they struck his testimony. The jury heard it. Unfortunately, they didn't care.
Well, it's not a jury of his peers. You're not getting a jury of your peers with a bunch of left-wing radicals that it's like now we need jury tests to see if you even know basic law or even the Bill of Rights. I mean, because now you just have radical leftists taking over everything that don't know jack about squat. And so, but to give it a little more of a personal effect here, so this wasn't like, because in my case, after my sentencing, or rather before my sentencing, because you have the trial and then you get sentencing later, he's waiting sentencing, they just hold him right off to jail right then and there. They didn't say, okay, you're released to go on your own reconnaissance. No victims. But they just said, nope, we're hauling you to prison or we're hauling you to Rikers right now. Just right there, they cuffed him and took him.
Right. It was a big show, too. And I had told him that if we get this quick verdict, which I feared, and which is what happened, they were only out a couple of hours, that they would fill the courtroom with court officers to act like, you know, that he's some type of threat, which he wasn't. I mean, it was a very... intense emotional scene. His parents were in the courtroom. They raised this guy that's an absolute genius, a guy who contributes to society. He's a musician. I mean, he is a Renaissance man.
And his parents took a major hit just to keep him out of jail, by the way.
Yep. Yeah, they had done that. They put their house up. They had to pay a bail bondsman. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that they had done. So when the verdict came back, I asked the judge to allow him to remain sentenced. I said, look, this guy's come back to each and every court appearance. You're very well aware, judge, that we want to get this case to federal court. You even brought that up. And that's when she said, you're not going to argue Second Amendment in this courtroom, even though we did. We did sneak it in there.
Is there any chance we can get him out either pre or post sentencing?
No. So the DA asked for remand, which is to be held without bail. I argued to allow him to get out. The judge said no. And there's no, so we could apply for bail pending appeal, but no intermediate. So that's in front of an appellate judge. There's no judge at an intermediate appellate court that's going to grant him bail pending appeal.
So the soonest you could get him at least pending appeal would be what, a year or so?
It's hard to say. Unfortunately, the appellate court that sits over Brooklyn also covers cases from Queens, Nassau County, Westchester, Staten Island, Suffolk County. It's a huge geographic area, and they are backlogged on appeals. So we potentially could get him in a, I would think, the arguments heard by sometime early next year, perhaps with oral arguments. But even then, that's a stretch. So, yeah, he's going to be sitting for a bit. We have zero chance in the intermediate appellate court. We know this. We have maybe a 5% chance in the high court of New York State, which is in Albany, because there is one judge out of seven. There's seven justices on the, they call them, basically they're the equivalent of the U.S. Supreme Court. They're a co-equal court. So the federal court system runs parallel to state court systems, and the U.S. Supreme Court cannot tell a state court what to do on matters of state law. They can only do tell them what to do on matters of federal law. We've asserted a Second Amendment violation here. So in that situation, the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, the Supreme Court's really your shot here. I would say you have, my personal opinion, I think you got a good shot at the Supreme Court, quite frankly, at least where the way it lies now. I would say it's obviously your best shot, but I would even argue a good shot. All right, to put this, I'm trying to think of the best way to ask this question, and we're almost out of time. How did they build this case? How did they get their evidence? How was Dexter even on their radar?
The ATF, you know, our favorite, you know.
Was there a Fourth Amendment violation?
No. So they got a search warrant, and they had, based on the information they gave under New York state law, there was probable cause to search his home.
So in other words, you make a purchase, you're on a list.
Correct. He was on a list. So what ATF does is partner with local law enforcement, in this case, the NYPD, and they track Dexter. The ATF tracked him and provided that information to the NYPD. So they were monitoring him for almost 2 years. It's unclear as to what point they transferred it over, but there were ATF agents who raided. That were
could it be that for 2 years? Why would they? Could it be they were wanting him to purchase more and more and more so that they could have a larger case instead of just cutting it off there?
Yes, there's no doubt about that. They noticed that he purchased a large amount of firearms parts. I mean,
purchase and they came in, then maybe he's looking at like a couple months or a year tops.
The parts are legal. So, you know, there are some things that violate city ordinances, right? Some of the receivers or, you know, things
if
like
I
that.
If I build a trebuchet out of wood, am I going to get arrested? I'm being facetious, obviously, here. Vino, this is look, you obviously have a great man, truly a lead Second Amendment activist right now, maybe the top, considering what he's put on the line here, his life. I hope more support comes your way, and I hope more attention is drawn to this case, not for your sake, but for Dexter's, because he's the champion right now, and I wish you the best of luck. Obviously, you know you're up against it, and appreciate your time. If there's any updates, you let us know, and we'll give them right here on this show.
All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Here you go, folks. You heard it. In New York, the Second Amendment doesn't apply. All right. We've had a very busy broadcast. I've still got a ton of news, a ton of video clips. We'll try to squeeze it all in. Part of me just wants to take calls because we barely took any calls, if any calls at all this week. But still just so much news. And want to give big ups to the crew. We got a bit of a skeleton crew today. A lot of these guys have been here since about 6 in the morning. Still working hard. Now, when we have to work long days, we have two sources of caffeine, and that is either the coffee from InfoWarsStore.com. By the way, when we have the in-studio guests, we bring them coffee or they go get coffee in the break room. They always love it. They always talk about how great it is. Find out why for yourself with the coffee at InfoWarsStore.com or Turbo Force Plus. We say it because it's true. 10 hours of clean energy in one scoop of Turbo Force Plus from InfoWarsStore.com. That's 40% off right now. 40% off Turbo Force Plus at InfoWarsStore.com. Everybody's looking for energy. Everybody's reaching for a little extra boost to get them through the day. And Turbo Force Plus is our source here. Now, obviously, energy drinks and these different kinds of energy drinks have taken off. There's a big market. But they're either unhealthy, filled with processed sugars, taste like battery acid, have a crash, don't last that long, whatever it is, all the negatives. We have erased all of those negatives from the picture with Turbo Force Plus. Tastes great, doesn't taste like battery acid, doesn't have the crash, actually gives you energy, 10 hours in one scoop, and is not filled with unhealthy ingredients. So 40% off Turbo Force Plus at InfoWars Store. Find out for yourself. 10 hours. Clean energy. One scoop. You'll see. All right. Let's just start going through some of these videos. They tried to make the Dexter Reed situation. Guys, just B-roll me clip 13. They tried to turn the Dexter Reed situation into the next George Floyd. Thank goodness they failed. This was their latest attempt to drum up a massive protest, and nobody really showed up. And so that's good news. Now, again, Dexter Reed shot at police. And so whether you're in a police officer's uniform or not, if you get shot at and you have a gun, you're probably going to shoot back in self-defense. But just generally speaking, probably not a good idea to shoot at a police officer. And he made that decision. And they tried to drum up George Floyd 2.0 over it. And I would say it's probably safe to say it's failed at this point. All right. This situation with the protests at Columbia and around the world with Israel and Hamas and all this stuff, I already gave you kind of the geopolitical take on it earlier. You're being lied to. You're being set up. They're stealing our money. I just don't trust any of it anymore, as there's bombs in Israel, bombs in Iran, bombs here, bombs there. It seems like Israel has negotiated. I mean, at this point, it seems like Israel has negotiated deals. Whether they have an upper hand or not, I don't know. But you might argue they do with Mossad or an Epstein-like operation. But either way, I think Israel is negotiating deals with these other nations. And basically, the negotiation is, we're all going to take advantage of the United States of America. We're all going to be taking advantage of Joe Biden. We're all going to get hundreds of billions of dollars. And we're going to kind of just, for lack of a better phrase, fake these wars. And I'm not saying there's not real stuff going on. I'm not saying there's not real stuff and geopolitical tensions and people dying. That's all real. But it seems like there's some sort of agreement where, hey, we're all going to kind of milk this Biden administration for hundreds of billions of dollars, and we'll really minimize the real damage here. But Israel, you do whatever the hell you want in the Gaza Strip. That's kind of what it looks like to me now. So I don't even want to go into the weeds of the latest situation there. But okay, now, folks, this stuff is just crazy here, dealing with the protests. Jewish student suspended for using fart sprays during anti-Israel protest sues Columbia University. She's saying because it's anti-Semitic. This is just nuts. A Jewish Columbia University student claims she has been improperly suspended for discharging two novelty fart sprays during a campus anti-Israel rally, arguing the substances were non-toxic and his actions were harmless. Did you ever have those little fart bag things? I mean, they stunk. You know, you did this when you were in like third grade. It was funny to have the little fart bag. You get it at like a carnival. You pop the little thing, throw it in a group of your friends. It stinks. Well, apparently the college kids are doing this. So this Jewish student was fart bagging. A Jewish student was fart bagging the pro-Palestine protests and got suspended. Is that a suspendable offense? I don't know. But is suing because it's anti-Semitic. So the whole thing is just nuts. By the way, they're back. And get this. Remember we asked the question, how is it that they have these nice tents? How is it that they all have the exact same brand new nice tents? Well, we got to the bottom of it. The protests are being funded by a group. Honestly, I'm going to tell you something, folks. Even covering this stuff is like, because it's like chum in the water at this point. So I have to be very careful how I word this. But let's just say there might be a group called Jews for Peace. And this group may or may not be funded by George Soros. And they may or may not provide resources to make sure these protests happen across the nation. it might be going on. But the point is, they're back. After all the arrests, guys, show me clip 22. It looks like they're back, and even in bigger numbers, as you look at the scenes here, this was post the next day after all the arrests. There's more people there than there were the day before. So this thing isn't going anywhere. It's the new cause celeb. It's the new campus hashtag. And you know what's frustrating to me? You know what really sets me on fire? That you've got all these protesters. Oh, I'm a Jew. I'm Palestinian. I'm anti-Israel. I'm pro-Israel. Oh, this is anti-Semitic. Oh my gosh, Hamas. You're all in the state of New York, where a man's Second Amendment rights have just been violated. You're all in the state of New York, where they're politically persecuting Donald Trump. You're all in the state of New York, where Chuck Schumer has just initiated a dictatorship over Congress. And you sit here like an anglerfish dangling the light rod in front of you, and you just sit here. And you just go for that rod every time. Every single time. Like a fool. And there's that anglerfish coming right behind you. But look, oh, it's an Israel flag. Oh, look, it's a Palestinian flag. Oh, look, it's the Middle East. Oh, look, it's anti-Semitism. Ooh, look, it's Hamas. Ooh, yeah, dangling that little angler rod right there, dangling it out there. Yeah, and here you come right into that light. Oh, yeah, and then wham! You lose everything. You lose your country. You lose your civilization. You lose your Second Amendment right. You lose your First Amendment right. You end up in prison. You end up broke. But hey, I waved an Israeli flag. Hey, I waved a Palestinian flag. Ooh, I was part of the protest. I was part of the protest in April at Columbia University. Woohoo, yeah. I've never been to the Middle East. I don't live in the Middle East. Hell, I might not be able to locate it on a map, but I was there. Oh, America's burning to the ground? I don't care.
Well, I really doubt that we're going to see an inflationary cycle. That's a transitory thing.
Is infrastructure fun?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why are conservatives bad, Mommy? Because I thought we were supposed to conserve things.
The border is closed. The border is secure. The border is closed. The border is secure.
United States protect.
Details on that, Jackie. You're going to have to let me get back to you on that.
Who will be held accountable for this? This embarrassment.
Again, I take full responsibility.
And we are stronger economically than we have been in history.
It's the Looney Tune clown administration. All right, look, I still got a bunch of serious news and video clips. I'm going to have to save them. Let's have maybe not so much negativity as we go into the weekend. How about that? Let's try to go into the weekend with maybe a laugh. Maybe a laugh. I mean, I got all this news that Democrats trying to trans kids, and the Biden administration now making it legal. They want to make it nationwide where boys can compete against girls, and now girls are starting to protest against it. You have a bunch of these LGBTQ leaders that end up getting charged with sexual assault and everything else. Oh, the D.C. mayor took a trip to watch the Masters on taxpayers' dime because it was economic development trip. Of course it was. Of course it was. So we're just going to put that all on hold, and let's get a little relief here, shall we? Should we get a little relief before the weekend? Here's the great Alex Stanger, and It's funny, Alex Stein, Alex Stanger. It's the Alex combo here that really puts it to the city councils with the comedy routines, probably better than anybody else, at least recently. Here's Alex Stanger really upset because his trans daughter is being discriminated against in clip 17.
Good evening, board. Speaking on 7A regarding our student learning environment, I have a trans daughter who attends Whitestone Elementary School, okay? And my daughter, Annabelle, she has identified as a dinosaur since she was 3 years old. And it's really triggering when her science teacher, Miss Hubbard, has repeatedly claimed that the dinosaurs are extinct. And I demand that you remove this hateful language from our curriculum immediately, because you are undermining the existence of my beautiful daughter. You know, every night this past year, she's come home crying. She says, Daddy, 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 Miss Hubbard, she says I don't exist. She says that dinosaurs are extinct. You know, she's literally in tears, okay? And every night I have to tell her, look, baby girl, you are a Tyrannosaurus Rex, and you are valid. You know, I see the pain in my daughter's eyes, and I can't even begin to imagine the pain that every other trans kid in the state of Texas has to feel on a reoccurring basis, especially if they are trans species. You know, the bullying, it's got to stop, all right? The transphobia has to stop. And Miss Hubbard, she needs to resign immediately. You know, the dinosaurs are not extinct because my beautiful daughter is alive and she is valid. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, speaker number three.
Two. All right. Yeah, all right. Okay, how can you not like Donald Trump? You know, everybody did before he ran for president. What changed? Hadn't seen this one before. Saturday Night Live, a classic Saturday Night Live from the 90s, Donald Trump, a keyboard master. Did you know that Donald Trump was a keyboard master? Check out this classic in clip four.
So, Katrina, why do you think Amy sent Nick up to the suite and not you?
Because he's her boyfriend.
Her boyfriend?
He is not my boyfriend.
Okay, okay, you two, go outside. We need to go and figure this up. Who's going up to the suite? And who's going down to the street? What do you guys think?
How much time do we have?
We've got enough time for rehearsal.
We can use it.
You say go, I'm there.
What are we waiting for? Let's plug in.
How's that keyboard sound there, Mr. Trump?
The old keyboard. A whole orchestra at the end of my fingertips. This is fantastic. Which one of our songs should we do? Cold-Blooded City, Living It Up, Knife's Edge, Overdose.
Let's do She's Got Class.
Nice.
Let's jam.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, I'm looking at her, she's looking at him. She's got class.
From the pages of a classy magazine, she's got class.
She's got class.
Chateau Lafite lobster.
God bless.
Everybody wants to smell her perfume. She's got class.
George, you play the right chord. Shouldn't that be a D flat minor?
That's what I'm playing, D flat minor.
In my opinion, I think you should turn your amp down, Mr. Trump. All I'm hearing is keyboard.
Well, to hear it. Look, you hear that? It sounds like a man to me has just entered the room.
Well, let's hear it. Let's hear you play a little bit right there. Oh, that sounds great. Whoa. I'm going to turn up too.
In my opinion, let's take it from the chorus.
1, 2, 3, 4.
She's got
drinking champagne.
stop. This is terrible. Something's off in our harmonies. We have to fix it immediately. The battle of the bands is only 16 months away. George, what are you singing?
She's got...
No. Look, listen to me. She's got...
No, Mr. Trump, you're up here. I'm down there.
I'm right here.
Carolyn's in the middle.
Okay, how's this, Mr. Trump?
Better, George. Better.
Got class. She's got class.
We got class. Okay,
I tell you, look. I've got to be honest. I don't like our sound at all.
Is everything okay in here?
No, frankly, it isn't. George's harmonies are terrible. They're way off.
What?
Well, could we go back outside?
Hey, ladies, can either of you sing?
I can.
Great. Well, Amy, you're going up to the suite. Katrina, you're hired.
Excuse me?
As our lead vocal in the middle of rehearsals, right now.
Let's do it. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Good now. We're going to take you all. We've got a big gig coming up at the Taj. Very
good. All right, a little comic relief from all of the madness. I hadn't seen that one. We see all these classic Trump SNL skits, but had not seen that one. So figured we'd share that with you today. All right, that is going to just about do it. There's going to be some big guests this weekend at InfoWars. Alex is going to be doing some exclusive interviews and breaking reports. So be on the lookout for that at InfoWars.com and at band.video. A lot of content happening this weekend. And then, of course, the Alex Jones Show live Sunday night. Sunday Night Live with Chase Geyser as well. And then we'll be right back here Monday, God willing, doing it all again. But you know what? As it appears more and more every day that we live in an open-air, mental, insane asylum, I hope that you find some time to relax and enjoy life this weekend. Really do. Who knows how much longer you're going to be able to. Might just make it illegal. Let's enjoy it while we can, shall we? Have a good weekend. Big ups to the crew filling in today. And we shall see you guys next week.